put on my blue suede shoes and I boarded the plane. Touchdown in the land of the Delta Blues in the middle of a pouring rain. W.C. Handy, won't you look down over me? 'Cause I've got a first class ticket and I'm blue as a boy can be. Walking in Memphis, walking with my feet 10 feet off the field. Walking in Memphis, but do I really feel the way I feel? Saw the ghost of Elvis down Union
to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
A union for United Airlines has taken their pension battle to the world. Members of the IFPTE, representing maintenance workers for the airline, have begun encouraging Star Alliance Airlines to not benefit from the misery of workers who may be losing their pensions. The Star Alliance is a group of 16 worldwide airlines that share seats and frequent flyer benefits with each other. United Airlines is a member. They have begun handing out pamphlets at airports globally explaining that United Airlines CEO Glenn Tilton secured his own $4.5 million pension right before the airline declared bankruptcy. Under bankruptcy law, $8 billion of the airline's pension obligations will be transferred to the government's Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation.
Eastern Washington University economics professor Doug Orr is convinced there's no Social Security crisis, so nothing needs to be done to save it. Orr says those who hate Social Security are out to gut it, in part to give business a tax cut while dismantling what remains of the social safety net for workers.
I think the larger goal of destroying Social Security is to destroy part of that sense of security for working people in America, which will make them much more at the mercy of their employers.
Orr says higher worker productivity plus economic growth will more than pay for full Social Security benefits for baby boomers. Rescinding the Bush tax cut that Orr says went mostly to the wealthy would strengthen Social Security. Orr believes that privatizing Social Security is part of a larger anti-worker agenda.
This is not an issue that only affects retirement. If they succeed in destroying Social Security, every single worker in the United States, way before retirement, are going to see the unemployment rate going up. They're going to see their wages being pushed down. Gutting Social Security is simply the first step in driving down the living standards of people who work for wages in this country.
More than 600 auto workers protested the outsourcing of their jobs to Mexico outside of Ford Motor Company's corporate headquarters on Friday. United Auto Workers Local 36 organized the protest in part because the company is increasing the new car lines being built in Mexico. The union also believes the company may be planning to shut down its assembly plant in Wixom, Michigan. Since 2002, the plant has lost 55% of its hourly workforce, and production of the Thunderbird will be phased out next year. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The Economic Policy Institute has released a paper that has troubling findings concerning U.S. trade with China over the past 14 years. According to the study, China is gaining an advantage in auto and aerospace industries. Also, China's exports of products that depend on high-skilled labor, such as computers and electronics, are growing faster than its export of low-value labor-intensive items, such as shoes. More than 1.5 million U.S. jobs have been lost because of the China deficit.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Are you tired of progressives spending all their energy on defensive struggles where a victory simply maintains the status quo? We are too, and we're doing something about it. At ReclaimDemocracy.org, we're taking the initiative to revoke corporate power and restore citizen authority over corporations to enable genuine progress on the many issues that we all care about. Get involved. Visit us online at ReclaimDemocracy.org or call 406-582-1224.
It would be funny watching George W. running around the country on his little stick horse pretending to be a reformer if it was not so sad, so wrong. His latest war whoop is that, by gollies, he wants to reform the so-called tort laws so HMOs, hospitals, doctors, and drug companies can't be driven out of business by us patients who sue them when their practices harm us. Bush's handler sent him to Collinsville, Illinois, just outside of St. Louis, where he held a photo op and labeled both St. Clair and Madison counties as, quote, judicial hellholes. He noted the 720 malpractice and wrongful death suits have been filed there against area practitioners in the past 7 years, with jury awards causing enormous economic damage to them and curtailing health care in the area. The issue of tort law has long been the prerogative of state governments, but George says it now must be federalized because, he says, that, quote, junk lawsuits are proliferating all over. Juries, he wailed, are handing out such massive judgments to patients who sue that entire hospitals, groups of doctors, and other medical businesses are shutting down. Problem is, it just ain't so. The watchdog group Public Citizen found that of the 720 cases that George cited, only 14 resulted in jury verdicts, and only 7 of those verdicts sided with the patients. Excuse me, but 7 verdicts in 7 years is hardly a federal crisis. Moreover, Bush's proposed remedy is to cap pain and suffering damages at $250,000 per case. Yet in the 2 counties cited by George as judicial hellholes, only 1 case, 1, resulted in a jury award that exceeded this cap. Again, this is hardly a runaway system requiring federal intervention. This is Jim Hightower saying, to put some truth on Bush's lies about junk lawsuits and to help defend your legal rights, call Public Citizen, 202-588-7741.
A message from the American Library Association and Bernie Mac about the hard times facing our nation's libraries.
Hey, I'm Bernie Mac, and libraries need your help. Many are forced to cut back hours, reduce services, and even close their doors. So what can you do? I tell you what, support your local library and help keep your library doors open. Contact your local library to find out how you can make a difference in your community. The future is at your library. So make sure your library has a future. Just a little something from the Mac Man.
Brought to you by the Campaign for America's Libraries. For more information, visit the American Library Association website at www.ala.org.
Rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live, coast to coast, from California to North Carolina, on terrestrial radio stations, beaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite system, streaming around the planet on radiopower.org. Last check, we were getting listeners in 97 countries regularly. Rather remarkable. Archives at whiterosesociety.org. If you want to drop it in the live chat room, which is already well populated, go to tomhartman.com. However you spell it should get you there. And you just click the live chat button. You'll have to go through our message board first, and then you can get into the live chat room. And our telephone number today, all days actually, 1-866-889-8894. 1-866-889-8894. Today, our quote for the day from George Washington, that great liberal. Yes, that's what he called himself. As mankind becomes more liberal, said George Washington, they will be more apt to allow that all those who conduct themselves as worthy members of the community are equally entitled to the protections of civil government. I hope ever, George Washington said, I hope ever to see America among the foremost nations of justice and liberality. Welcome, by the way. Greetings to our listeners, new listeners, WPTT in Pittsburgh, Pittsburgh's talk radio station. Pleased to have you with us. Lots to talk about today in our first hour. Our question, your news media now claims the right to lie. Actually, they've been claiming that right in court for some time, specifically a Fox television station down in Florida. What are you going to do about it? We've got a corporate personhood alert. We're going to be getting into that in our second hour. Have we now entered Charles Dickens, USA? If one of us is begging, have we failed? Have we lost sight of that pursuit of happiness that we find both in the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution, laid out by Thomas Jefferson and by the founders of all the world's major religions, including Jesus, the one who's most often quoted by our president these days? And in our third hour, is Rumsfeld's dirty little secret going to bring about a military coup? Could we see the end of democracy in the United States? And is this something that Jefferson also foresaw? And the more bizarre question for our third hour, has Donnie Rumsfeld hired Osama bin Laden? There may be some evidence of that or something very much like it. Time will tell. An interesting day. We got an email here from Brian Kill Your Television in the chat room. I've taken a look here. I don't think he's shown up yet today. Anyhow, he says, I want to commend ABC. I flipped through all the news channels repeatedly. He's talking about the last Thursday, the coronation for George W. He says, ABC covered the protesters and actually made fantastic comments about how the protesters loved America just as the rest of us do. The rest of the newscasters, however, paid almost no attention to the protesters, and when they did, it was all very cynical. He says, I just thought I'd let you know what I saw. Yeah, I was amazed, Brian. I watched it on CNN, and the protesters got short shrift. Most of the discussion was about license plates and the formation of the motorcycle. I mean, it was very, very trivial. And the protests were really a significant part of that. It far more so than in any previous presidential inaugural, except 4 years ago, where they got virtually no coverage on national television. But this... there's a larger story here. There's a larger story that has to do with the media. A few years ago, there were two reporters down in Tampa, Florida, Steve Wilson and Jane Aker. They were working for a Fox television station. And this was 1998. And they produced a program, an investigative report. And this, by the way, this is another reason why we see the death of investigative journalism. Let me just digress from this for just a moment. I was strolling through the conservative websites over the weekend, something that you have to do when you're in this business. It's like, please don't hit my thumb with that hammer again. Yeah, well, okay, one more time. Anyway, and I found an article on, I believe it was on WorldNet Daily. I'm pretty sure it was, which is one of the right-wing websites published out of Grants Pass, Oregon, which by coincidence is the headquarters of the radio network that syndicates Michael Wiener, also known as Michael Savage, his real name, Michael Wiener, and many other rather toxic right-wing hosts. And I don't know if there's a connection between the two, but it's interesting. My brother-in-law just moved to Grants Pass, so I'll have to ask him to check that. But in any case, this article said, well, now we know that I'm paraphrasing here wildly from memory, but to the effect of, well, now we know that the memos that Dan Rather relied on were phony, and therefore there's no truth to the story that George W. used influence to get into the National Guard, that he shirked his duty, and that he got out early, bloody blah. Well, it's just that just ain't the case. First of all, the memo's accuracy or inaccuracy, their reality or forgery, has not yet been demonstrated. That was the conclusion of the finding. And they basically said they were going to fire these four people because if you can't prove that it is real, then that's the threshold that CBS has. But nobody has proved that they're forgeries either. But even setting those aside, I mean, you just throw them out altogether, which they should have. They should not have used them because they, as CBS said, they couldn't demonstrate that they were absolutely accurate. It wouldn't have changed the story at all. It wouldn't have changed it one bit. They had witnesses. They had other documentation. They had people who were there. They had the testimony of the guy who pulled the strings
on behalf of George W.'s daddy to get his son into the, you know, jump him over 320 some odd people to get him into the National Guard, Texas Air National Guard. They, I mean, it just went on and on and on. But the cons are effectively rewriting history right now. So, and this is nothing new. I mean, this is the, but the point is, this signals the death of investigative reporting. When anybody doing investigative reporting is so terrified that some little detail may fall through the cracks, and that afterwards just saying, oops, well, we didn't get that detail right, but the story in and of itself still stands, won't be enough, because there's this giant right-wing echo chamber that's going to beat them to the ground mercilessly. Signals, in my opinion, and just, I mean, look at it. Just look at it. The death of investigative journalism. I remember when CBS used to break these kinds of stories. I mean, 60 Minutes, you know, the old joke about, you know, it's going to be a bad day when you show up at work and there's a 60 Minutes camera crew there. Ain't so any longer. Ain't so any longer. So anyhow, we have here now the situation with Steve Wilson and Jane Aker. And this, going back a little bit, the reason I'm going back is because the news hook for this thing is that just in the last few weeks, these two former employees of this TV station, investigative reporters Jane Aker and Steve Wilson, have filed a petition against WTVT. This is Fox Channel 13 in Tampa, a unit of Rupert Murdoch's Fox Television Empire. This, I'm sharing this, by the way, with you from Canada's independent online source of news, analysis, information, and fun. Straight goods. Strangely enough, straightgoods.ca. And what, because it's not going to get a lot of coverage in the United States because, you know, people challenging the media. Well, here's what happened, just in quick form. These two folks did this study, and they found that, or they say that they found, that the bovine growth hormone that a certain large multinational corporation close to the Bush administration, including the Jeb Bush administration, has been selling aggressively to cattle breeders and farmers and whatnot all across the country for years and years and years, or for recent years anyway. It's a recombinant, you know, it's a genetically engineered product, was getting into the milk supply and maybe affecting humans. Now, I don't think that they went so far in this report. It's been a few years since I read it. I don't think they went so far as to suggest that this might be the reason why over the last 20 years we've seen the average age of puberty drop by a full 2 years for the first time in thousands of years of human history. Although there are people who are speculating that it may have something to do with the hormones in the milk and the cheese and the meat that we're getting. But, you know, whether it's that particular one or not, nobody knows. But in any case, they did find a link to the possibility of cancer and a few other things. And they basically just did this report and said this stuff is there. And they're telling you it's not, and it's there. And so the Fox TV station said to them, well, you have to change the story. Actually, they were originally going to run the story. And then Monsanto heard about it, and they contacted the Fox station, and correspondents went back and forth. And the Fox station went to the reporters and said, you got to change the story. And they went through 10 rewrites, 20 rewrites, 30 rewrites, 40 rewrites. Kept rewriting the story and rewriting the story and rewriting the story until finally the management essentially said, you've got to rewrite this story in such a way that the investigative reporters, Steve Wilson and Jane Aker, concluded that it was no longer truthful. In other words, they were being ordered by their employer, this TV station, to lie on the air. And at that point, they said, we won't do it. We will not lie on the air. And the TV station fired them. So they sued for wrongful termination. They had a contract, you know, with this TV station as talent, all that kind of thing. They sued for wrongful termination. And a jury of their peers, a jury of six people in the state of Florida, unanimously concluded that the reports at the heart of the dispute were, quote, false, distorted, or slanted, and granted them $425,000 as a way of slapping the wrist of the TV station, saying, you shouldn't do this. There is, you know, it's important that the news be news. So the Fox station appealed to a federal court, a three-judge federal court. Two of the judges, appointees of the Reagan or Bush administration, one a Clinton administration, Carter administration appointee, as I recall. And in a 2-3 decision, the appeals court reversed the decision. The Fox station issued a news release saying that they had been vindicated. And that's where the case stands. Fox is claiming, essentially, that it has the right to lie to you and me. And so now Steve Acker and Jane Wilson are suggesting that the FCC should not renew the station, the license of this TV station. They say no broadcaster should be allowed to put its own financial interests ahead of the public interest. Interesting stuff. And, you know, and then they raise the question, which is more important? The FCC regulating Janet Jackson's wardrobe malfunction, or Bubba the Love Sponge, or whether or not you and I are getting truthful and accurate information? Really interesting. Well, the story gets even more bizarre. I'll share that with you right after this. 20 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman with you.
Attention, Tom Hartman listeners. I'm here with Brush Lintball.
This is the old Brusho, Brush Lintball.
To tell you about DemocraticMatch.com. You're listening to Tom Hartman because you're intelligent, progressive, and like the thousands of members at DemocraticMatch.com, you don't drink right-wing Kool-Aid. Right, Brush?
Right-wing wackos are fine to laugh at on all their radio programs, but no one wants to date one, right?
DemocraticMatch.com is a dating site made specifically for Democrats and other progressive individuals who want to date those with similar worldviews. What do you think of Democrats these days, Brush?
Democrats are smarter. Democrats are more evolved. Democrats are more fun. Democrats make better lovers. Democrats have better hearts.
This is your chance to meet other liberals who listen to Tom Hartman, people who cherish the principles of our democracy, believe in a woman's right to choose, believe in protecting our incredible planet. In short, DemocraticMatch.com gives you the opportunity to meet a real soulmate. So what have you got to lose? Sign up today at DemocraticMatch.com.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Love guides.
My daughter has a million things going on in her daily life, from softball to band to voice lessons. My husband and I like to make sure she doesn't spend her idle time idle, because an idle mind is a playground for trouble. You see, occupying our daughter's free time and keeping her active makes us feel confident that she won't be hanging out with the wrong crowds.
Love, the anti-drug. Call 1-800-788-2800 or visit theantidrug.com for information on how to prevent your child from using marijuana.
Paid for by ONDCP.
Do you have a child with ADHD who is misunderstood, unhappy, and dissatisfied with school? Are you ready for an educational change and for your child to like school again? Consider The Hunter School, a residential K-8 school specializing in the education of children with ADHD, hunters in a farmer's world. Hunter School appreciates and honors the uniqueness of each student while building upon his inherent strengths and abilities. For more information, find us on the web at hunterschool.org.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. efforts? According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. 24 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Your light at the end of the tunnel of talk radio. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number. Sinclair Broadcasting now getting into the act. We'll share that with you in just a moment. But first, let's take a phone call here. We've got John in Grand Rapids listening to WTKG there. Hey, John, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Tom. Well, you are the light at the end of the tunnel, and probably the divine light at the end of the tunnel, right, Tom?
Well, I'm glad you're so impressed, John. I really am.
Oh, man. Spook Central.
John, you got anything to say today?
Yeah. You know, you're talking about those memos. You're really still just thinking that George Bush got a super deal in the National Guard, and it's all, and you still think all that memo stuff is true? And
no, I'm not saying the memos are true. I'm saying that all of the other evidence backs it up. That story has been out for three years.
But Tom, you know, they've been working on this story for 5-6 years. They based him with that story when he was running.
John, I'm sorry to burst your bubble. I'm sorry to burst your bubble, John. But they broke that. BBC broke that story in 1999. In 1999, exactly. That's the whole point. This is
beaten him to death with this for 6 years.
No, it had not broached the mainstream press in the United States. The BBC did a 30-minute special on this in 1999.
They are Spook Central.
Okay, the BBC did a special on this in 1999, John, and laid this thing out, laid out all the details. They had the whole thing, and it had never broken in the mainstream American press. It sent, you know, nobody was willing to touch it. Hey, you know, it's
George W. Bush. He's, you know, his family is powerful.
And finally, CBS decided that they were going to carry the story. And, you know, unfortunately, they got these documents in there that have not been, their veracity has not been verified, but the documents were really largely irrelevant to the story. As Dan Rather said in his apology, as CBS concluded in an investigation, that, you know, that was conducted by a couple of outsiders who were fairly independent folks. And it's just very straightforward. Bush, George W. Bush, was, you know, as Ann Richards says, he was born on third and thought he'd hit a triple. She said of his daddy, you know, born with a silver foot in his mouth. And it's just his entire life had been one of people cutting him slack. You know, Bin Laden's half-brother, loaning him money to bail out his failing oil company, Osama bin Laden's brother, his borrowing $600,000 to get into the Texas Rangers and then bailing out with millions, his insider trading deal, his cocaine arrest that he got out of by doing community service. He talks about it in his autobiography as if he just suddenly decided that he was going to do 30 days of community service for fun. His drunk driving arrest, which was covered up. In fact, it turns out that Alberto Gonzalez helped cover up the drunk driving arrest. This just came out today. This is the Center for American Progress is reporting on this. Alberto Gonzalez helped cover up his drunk driving arrest back in 1997 when he was governor of Texas. And it didn't come out until a week before the election of 2000. You'll recall that was everybody, all the Republicans were going, screaming foul. Oh, Al Gore pulling this thing out of the hat. No, I'm sorry, John, but it's there. It's real. It's well documented. What I find so fascinating is that the folks who drink the Kool-Aid, you know, the absolute true believe right wingers are unwilling to actually look at the evidence and say, yeah, it might be. Now, this doesn't necessarily disqualify him for being president of the United States, but it, in my opinion, it does raise questions about his competence to lead a nation in war. What you find is that people who have seen war, people who have been in war zones, I've been in a war zone. It is hell. It is unbelievable. It is the most shocking thing that you can imagine to watch a person get shot and die. I mean, it's most, no matter what you've seen on the screen, it doesn't prepare you for the reality of it. And that's why people who'd actually been in war, like Colin Powell, were saying, hey, let's not do this. And guys who'd only seen John Wayne movies, like George W. Bush and Dick Cheney and Rummy and whatnot, they're all, yeah, let's do it. It's cool. It ain't cool. It's awful. Especially when there's no good reason. 29 minutes past the hour.
Hank Montenegro of Morganville, New Jersey wrote, Dear Mr. Oreck, ever since we purchased your 8-pound Oreck XL vacuum, my wife has been in heaven. Recently, she panicked, believing she'd broken the vacuum. I contacted your customer service department, and after a few questions, I was sent a replacement part at no charge. The machine is as good as new. Try my 8-pound Oreck XL risk-free for 30 days. Call 1-800-989-4200. 1-800-989-4200.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
A union for United Airlines has taken their pension battle to the world. Members of the IFPTE, representing maintenance workers for the airline, have begun encouraging Star Alliance Airlines to not benefit from the misery of workers who may be losing their pensions. The Star Alliance is a group of 16 worldwide airlines that share seats and frequent flyer benefits with each other. United Airlines is a member. They have begun handing out pamphlets at airports globally explaining that United Airlines CEO Glenn Tilton secured his own $4.5 million pension right before the airline declared bankruptcy. Under bankruptcy law, $8 billion of the airline's pension obligations will be transferred to the government's Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation.
Eastern Washington University economics professor Doug Orr is convinced there's no Social Security crisis, so nothing needs to be done to save it. Orr says those who hate Social Security are out to gut it, in part to give business a tax cut while dismantling what remains of the social safety net for workers.
I think the larger goal of destroying Social Security is to destroy part of that sense of security for working people in America, which will make them much more at the mercy of their employers.
Orr says higher worker productivity plus economic growth will more than pay for full Social Security benefits for baby boomers. Rescinding the Bush tax cut that Orr says went mostly to the wealthy would strengthen Social Security. Orr believes that privatizing Social Security is part of a larger anti-worker agenda.
This is not an issue that only affects retirement. If they succeed in destroying Social Security, every single worker in the United States, way before retirement, are going to see the unemployment rate going up. They're going to see their wages being pushed down. Gutting Social Security is simply the first step in driving down the living standards of people who work for wages in this country.
More than 600 auto workers protested the outsourcing of their jobs to Mexico outside of Ford Motor Company's corporate headquarters on Friday. United Auto Workers Local 36 organized the protest in part because the company is increasing the new car lines being built in Mexico. The union also believes the company may be planning to shut down its assembly plant in Wixom, Michigan. Since 2002, the plant has lost 55% of its hourly workforce, and production of the Thunderbird will be phased out next year. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The Economic Policy Institute has released a paper that has troubling findings concerning U.S. trade with China over the past 14 years. According to the study, China is gaining an advantage in auto and aerospace industries. Also, China's exports of products that depend on high-skilled labor, such as computers and electronics, are growing faster than its export of low-value labor-intensive items, such as shoes. More than 1.5 million U.S. jobs have been lost because of the China deficit.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
If this were a dictatorship, it'd be a heck of a lot easier. Just so long as I'm the dictator.
You gave them the old
Stay the course, I'm your man. Why, he'll flip-flop ya. He has no strength to lead. Yes, this you feared. While soldiers' jobs and surplus disappeared. Came from the old devil speak. Yes, swift folks so windled.
The old razzle-dazzle.
No one could hear the truth above the roar.
Yes, indeed. Welcome back.
And though your debating was a stinker, they bought it all. Hook, line, and sinker.
I love it.
Your razzle-dazzle tone.
Welcome back to the True People's Radio, the Tom Hartman radio program.
Practice their love with women all across this country.
I hear there's rumors on the internets.
You cannot lead if you send mixed messages.
Oh, my. Welcome back, my friends. It is time to take this to the next step. It is time for our corporate personhood alert. The robots, they're coming. They're not alive. They're not humans. But they want to claim that they can have human rights. Yes. Strange but true. Imagine something that isn't alive, that doesn't need fresh water to drink, that doesn't need pure air to breathe, that doesn't need healthy, safe food to eat, that doesn't fear death, that doesn't need safe drugs, that doesn't have to worry about retirement, that can live forever, that it can accumulate wealth infinitely without it ever having to go through probate, that can tear off its arm and create another one of itself, that can own others of itself without being subject to slavery laws or anti-slavery laws, that can change its citizenship in an hour. Imagine that entity claiming that under the Constitution of the United States, it should have the protections that the founders fought and died to put into the Bill of Rights, specifically to protect we the people, humans, from powerful institutions, specifically government. Yeah, I'm talking about corporations, of course. Here now we have a quote from Sinclair Broadcast Group, published on the PR Newswire. There's a news release that they issued. This was after, you know, this whole thing with Staples, the one of the, I believe it was Media Matters, I could be wrong, one of the groups that has consistently and steadily opposed Sinclair Broadcast's continuous running of right-wing editorials by this former CIA guy before or after whatever the local newscast in stations all across the country. I mean, Sinclair quotes themselves as being fairly huge. Sinclair says, in fact, I don't have it here. Anyway, Sinclair says, here's the quote, "The right to free speech." Now, notice right, the right to free speech. This is where they're talking about the First Amendment, obviously. "The right to free speech represents an integral part of the foundation upon which the United States was built." Absolutely right. "The chief complaint of the organizations which have targeted Sinclair is the nightly presentation of an editorial called The Point. This section of the news is clearly labeled as opinion and represents nothing more than the legal exercise by Sinclair, by a corporation, a non-living, non-breathing legal entity called into being, created by a Secretary of State." It's the only way you can start a corporation. You register with the Secretary of State. Yeah, there is a few federal corporations like Amtrak, but they're rare. They're few and far between. The word corporation does not exist in the Constitution. The founders left the creation and management of corporations to the states because they knew how dangerous corporations could be. They had just fought off the largest corporation in the world, the British East India Company. That's what the Boston Tea Party was all about. The East India Company had just gotten a huge tax rebate from King George and Parliament as a result of what Rustica's called barbarous extortions and bribes. Today we would call lobbying, right? And the Tea Act of 1773 was a tax cut for the East India Company. And it was going to allow the British East India Company to essentially wipe out all of their small competitors. And there were thousands of small competitors up and down the East Coast.
little tea shops, small tea importers. And the citizens of Boston said no. And a million-dollar act of vandalism confronted the world's largest multinational corporation and said no. And this is what kicked off the American Revolution in the winter of 1773, the Boston Tea Party. Led to the Boston Massacre and led to the, you know, and on, the shot heard around the world and then the Declaration of Independence and on we go. It, boom, off we go. Right, off to the races. And very clearly, the founders did not mean that a corporation should have these rights. And I'll get to that in just a second. Here's this, back to Sinclair's news release. Contrary to the impression being provided by those complaining about Sinclair's programming, in no way does Sinclair attempt to disguise opinion as news. The recent misstatements concerning Staples' advertising policy resulted in a tremendous outpouring of support for Sinclair's right to exercise First Amendment-protected free speech. You get this? They are claiming that they, as a corporation, have rights under the Constitution. What are they going to ask for next? The right to vote? The right to marry? And if they marry, do they have to marry the opposite sex? How about Sinclair asking for the right to a legal abortion? I mean, where does this go? See, when this nation was founded, the founders were really clear that historically there had been three kinds of tyrannies that for 7,000 years had ruled humans and were the sole holders of rights. Kings, popes, or other kinds of theocrats, mullahs and whatnot, warlord kings, popes, and the rich, which were referred to as the feudal lords or the barons. The high point of feudalism, of course, 1215, when the Magna Carta was signed, didn't give rights to people like you and me. It gave rights to the rich. But that was the point at which the rich had acquired so much power, they said to King John, hey, you want to keep being king? We'll let you play king, but you've got to sign this thing. In 1787, when the first draft of the Constitution was done, James Madison, who had shepherded this thing through the Constitutional Convention, many people call him the father of the Constitution. He had spent 5 years studying constitutions before, in anticipation of this meeting. He kept the official notes. His mentor was Thomas Jefferson throughout his life. And very proud of himself, he sent a copy of the Constitution, the first draft, to Jefferson, who at that time was living in Paris. He was the U.S. envoy to Paris, the equivalent of an ambassador, more or less. I mean, we weren't a nation, so it wasn't an ambassador yet, but the U.S. envoy to Paris. And he said, what do you think? And Jefferson wrote back saying, oh, I think it's beautiful, and I really like this, the separation of powers, the fact that the president can't declare war, and he just listed a whole bunch of things that he really liked. And then he said, I will now tell you what I do not like. This is a letter Jefferson wrote on December 20th, 1787. I will now tell you what I do not like. First, the omission of a Bill of Rights, providing clearly and without the aid of sophism for freedom of religion, freedom of the press, protection against standing armies, which we're going to get to in our third hour here. Restriction of commercial monopolies. Say what? Restriction of commercial monopolies? Yeah, Jefferson did not want corporate power to reach the level that it had with the East India Company. With the exception of Hamilton, arguably, perhaps Adams, but, you know, with the exception of Alexander Hamilton, by and large, this was a sentiment that was shared by all of the founders, certainly the vast majority of the founders. Restriction of commercial monopolies, the eternal and unremitting force of the habeas corpus laws. In other words, nobody can be thrown into jail without due process. Again, another thing that George W. has thrown out the window. And trials by jury in all matters of fact, triable by the laws of the land and not by the laws of nations. End quote. As President James Madison later wrote in an undated essay titled Monopolies, Perpetuities, Corporations, Ecclesiastical Endowments, he said, quote, there is an evil which ought to be guarded against in the indefinite accumulation of property from the capacity of holding it in perpetuity by ecclesiastical corporations. The power of all corporations ought to be limited in this respect. The growing wealth acquired by them never fails to be a source of abuses. President James Madison. President Andrew Jackson, December 3, 1833, his fifth annual message to Congress, his State of the Union address, quote, in this point of the case, the question is distinctly presented whether the people of the United States are to govern through representatives chosen by their unbiased suffrages, that's their vote, or whether the money and power of a great corporation are to be secretly exerted to influence their judgment and control their decisions. Martin Van Buren, his first inaugural address, 1837, December 5th. Quote, now, so you heard George's inaugural, right? Freedom and liberty, blah, blah. Here's what Martin Van Buren had to say. Quote, I am more than ever convinced of the dangers to which the free and unbiased exercise of political opinion, which is the only sure foundation and safeguard of Republican government, would be exposed by any further increase of the already overgrown influence of corporate authorities. You see, prior to 1886, it was a felony in most states for corporations to give money to politicians or otherwise try to influence elections. After all, people said, they can't vote. What are they doing in politics? Non-breathing, non-living, legal fictions. They feel no pain. They don't need clean water to drink, fresh air to breathe, healthy food to consume. They can live forever. They can't be put in prison. Wisconsin had a law, Section 4479A, way back when. No corporation doing business in the state shall pay or contribute or offer or agree to pay to contribute directly or indirectly any money, property, free service of its officers or individuals or thing of value to any political party, organization, committee, or individual for any political purpose whatsoever or for the purpose of influencing legislation of any kind or to promote or defeat the candidacy of any person for nomination, appointment, or election to any political office. And if you broke this law, 5 years in prison for acting on behalf of a corporation, and the corporation itself, the death penalty. It would be dissolved. In 1888, Grover Cleveland, December 3rd, his annual address to Congress. As we view the achievements of aggregated capital, we discover the existence of trusts, combinations, and monopolies while a citizen is struggling far in the rear is trampled to death beneath an iron heel. Corporations, which should be the carefully constrained creatures of the law and the servants of the people, are fast becoming the people's masters. Sinclair Broadcast Group in their news release says they are, quote, one of the largest and most diversified television broadcasting companies, currently owning and operating programming and providing sales services to 62 stations in 39 markets. Sinclair's television group reaches approximately 24% of U.S. television households, includes ABC, CBS, Fox, NBC, WP, and UPN affiliates. And they are claiming human rights. Human rights. Human rights. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Dave in Columbus, Ohio on the line. Hey, Dave, what's in your mind today?
Hey, Tom, I wanted to talk to you about the earlier story on the Fox News program affiliate.
Jane Aker and Steve Wilson in that case, yeah.
Right. Now, I think we've all dealt with various forms of the media, news reporters and such, that we all have to basically find out all the information on the story to so we can verify whether the story to begin with is true. And all the various different aspects.
Yeah, although frankly, I don't think we should have to. I mean, we should have some confidence that when we're told something, it is true. But what's your point, Dave?
Yeah, exactly. But the thing is, one of the things we've been shown by various different media outlets, both right and left, is that reporters, in pursuit of a story to make a big splash, sometimes overstate what the truth is.
Right.
And thus, we had the problem with George Bush and the National Guard service. Still a controversy, but there's no definitive answer on that, despite what you say on it, because there's other information that even you aren't presenting. So it's one of those things that we have to be careful of throwing one side overboard without having all the information. So
yeah,
we can evaluate what's true and what's not.
Yeah, here's my take on that, Dave, and I appreciate your comments and your call. When I was a kid, I remember there were two newspapers published in Detroit. I grew up in Lansing, Michigan. There were two newspapers published out of Detroit, the Free Press and the News. And one was the newspaper of business, and the other was the newspaper of labor. And see, this whole idea that you can get news that is absolutely unbiased is nonsense. It's just absolutely nonsense. It's one of the reasons why Fox News's listenership and viewership is growing so much, and why right-wing talk radio has worked, and why left-wing talk radio is picking up. Because everybody understands, it's even if the story is right down the middle, completely accurate, the fact that you chose that story over some other story reflects a worldview or bias. I mean, it's just very simple. And so what I would like to see is a return to the way journalism was in America for over 200 years, until the massive corporate consolidations of the last 20 years, when newspapers, radio stations, television stations, networks, radio, whatever, just said, here's our bias right up front. We're in favor of labor, or we're opposed to labor. We're in favor of going into World War II, or we're opposed to going into World War II. We're in favor, you know, whatever it may be. And then, you know, you get the news that you want. And you understand the perspective from which you're getting it. And you can read several newspapers and get several perspectives. And to some extent, you can do that now. But not so much in the national, in the mainstream media. It just doesn't work. I mean, it's just, so, you know, I guess in a way, I'm agreeing with you. Alan in Birmingham, Alabama on the line. Hey, Alan, what's up?
If we have a president that keeps saying that he wants to bring freedom around the world, but I think instead he wants to bring corporatism, and also the Patriot Act is more for protecting corporations than it is the people.
Well, I thought one of the interesting provisions of it is that now if you interfere with commercial activity, you can be branded a terrorist and lose all your rights, which means technically under the Patriot Act, if you protest in front of a store, if you strike in a way that interferes with commerce, theoretically, it hasn't been, nobody's tried it yet, you could be tried as a terrorist, which is absolutely bizarre. Alan, thanks for the call. We got to move along. I do appreciate it. Good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, the Tom Hartman Program, the place where smart people get their news.
Bonjour. My name is Michel, and I founded the Organic Wine Company with my sister 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines yet, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious that when turned into wine, you can really taste the difference. Our wines are delicious and eco-friendly, so I want to make it very easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you three of my favorite organic French wines at half their regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. C'est magnifique. And if you don't agree, I will gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE, which is ECOWINE. Au revoir.
Do you want to find out what the invasion of Iraq was really about? Read the new illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. Once you've read We the People, you'll understand why conservatives are trying to bankrupt government and how perpetual war is used as a political strategy in the United States. You'll learn how our votes are in danger and what we must do about it. You'll discover why the Alien and Sedition Acts of 1798 matter today. Populist watchdog and national radio commentator Jim Hightower had this to say about We the People.
Not only does this book tell you what's really going on, but it even draws you a picture of it. Read, learn, and act.
We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. A compelling story of how a government by and for the people has been replaced by corporate domination. Fully illustrated by Neil Cohn, We the People issues a call to action in a most entertaining way. Available in bookstores everywhere.
For thousands of years, millions of people have trusted the healing power of herbs. Healing Hollers, an earth-based business in the southern Ozarks, has formulated medical herbal salves proven effective in promoting healing and providing relief for many skin conditions, including a healing salve with antiseptic and antibacterial properties to treat cuts, burns, scalds, and wounds, an antifungal salve safe and effective for athlete's foot, ringworm, nail, and other fungal infections, and a soothing calendula salve to reduce pain and inflammation from dry skin, eczema, and rashes, including diaper rash. These salves contain only herbs and roots organically grown or ethically wildcrafted natural oils and beeswax from the Ozarks. To learn more about these salves and other natural products from Healing Hollers, go to www.healing-hollers.com. That's www.healing-hollers.com.
Some plants that desperately need to save water are quite generous in giving it away. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. Cactus that live in the desert need to conserve all their resources to survive. So scientists became curious when they saw a barrel cactus that seemed to be giving water away to the ants that were crawling all over it. The water is nectar that's rich with sugar. Joshua Ness says the sugar gets the ants jacked up on carbohydrates, and that makes them hungry for meat. Ness is an ecologist at the University of Arizona in Tucson. He says the ants satisfy their craving for meat by eating other insects on the cactus, insects that would otherwise chew up the cactus itself.
If you give them sugar, it eventually sort of requires that they go out and forage for meat, just like if we were to eat cake all day, eventually we'd want something a little more substantial. So indirectly, what we see then is that the more sugar these ants eat, the more aggressive they become, the more carnivorous or meat hungry. And what we find is that the most effective ant bodyguards are the ones that are the most meat hungry. So if we compare those different species in terms of their abilities to attack caterpillars or their willingness to do so, what we find is that the really sugar-hungry species don't do a particularly good job, but the meat-hungry species do.
Ants need to eat different types of food to maintain a proper balance of carbohydrates, fats, and proteins. The nectar from the cactus gives them a lot of carbohydrates that might be pushing this ratio out of line and prompting them to eat more meat to bring it back into balance. Ness and a team of researchers studied four species of ants in a cactus that's common in the Sonoran Desert. Ness says their findings are particularly interesting because they show how the ants provide an important service to the plant as long as they get their reward. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
W, you gotta help me. These mercury emission standards are gonna kill my bottom line. You'll take care of it? How much should I make this out for? Do say hello to your pappy.
We will save, we will cheer, millionaires of Bush are here, politicians start making a fuss.
And welcome back. Billionaires for Bush are here, no doubt about it. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. And Jeff in Boulder, Colorado on the line. Hey, Jeff, welcome to the show.
Hey, Tom. Nice show today.
Thank you.
I wanted to comment on the caller who called earlier, and I really enjoy the debate, but just laughing doesn't really bring a lot to the table.
Oh, you're talking about John from Grand Rapids? Yeah, his thing. You know, he likes to – I think he's got it stuck in his head, probably from adolescence, that ridiculing people is somehow an effective way to argue with them. You know.
Well, this is a Limbaugh technique too. So.
Yeah.
But I wanted to comment because I found that the whole debate on Bush's service was interesting because the official White House press release said that Bush never failed a physical, and I found that to be fascinating because it was never the question.
Right. The question
was,
did he show up?
Yeah. And so he couldn't fail a physical that he never showed up for.
Right.
And it's interesting how things get twisted like that.
Yeah. And this was right after they instituted random drug testing in the physicals. All of a sudden, he was not interested in taking the physicals.
It just shows how easily you can manipulate the public's opinion by just twisting the fact a little bit. They didn't lie when they said he never failed a physical. But that wasn't the question.
Yeah. Well said. Well said. Thanks a lot. Let's see. Oh, that's Jeff. Yeah. Thanks a lot. Appreciate the, 1-866-889-8894. I just want to wrap this thing up and say we have this situation now in America where corporations since the late 1900s have been claiming increasingly that they have human rights. And number one, I have to say, I am all in favor of the corporate form. This show is a corporation. I think corporations are fine things. The problem is when they grow so large that they can corrupt government. This is what Jefferson, talked about. When wealth is accumulated to the point where it threatens the state, then we, the people, are at risk. And when corporations are claiming, as Dow Chemical did, claiming the Fourth Amendment rights of privacy to say that the Environmental Protection Agency couldn't do surprise inspections, or the tobacco companies claiming a Fifth Amendment so that they didn't have to tell what they knew about the poisonous nature of their product. Nike arguing before the Supreme Court had the right to lie to people. You know, what this Fox station did in Florida. Walmart claiming 14th Amendment anti-discrimination to force themselves on communities, then, in my opinion, we have a problem. And a large part of this problem now is the corporate capture of our government. And it's only going to be reversed if you and I get involved and we take government back to people, back to we the people.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
If it weren't for In These Times, I'd be a man without a country, says author Kurt Vonnegut. For more than 27 years, the progressive news magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. It is the publication the scholar and activist Cornel West calls the most creative and challenging news magazine of the American left. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Turn to In These Times for stories on civil liberties, the environment, labor, feminism, and much more. Writer Barbara Ehrenreich put it this way: to people who say they are sick of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. That's 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
A union for United Airlines has taken their pension battle to the world. Members of the IFPTE, representing maintenance workers for the airline, have begun encouraging Star Alliance Airlines to not benefit from the misery of workers who may be losing their pensions. The Star Alliance is a group of 16 worldwide airlines that share seats and frequent flyer benefits with each other. United Airlines is a member. They have begun handing out pamphlets at airports globally explaining that United Airlines CEO Glenn Tilton secured his own $4.5 million pension right before the airline declared bankruptcy. Under bankruptcy law, $8 billion of the airline's pension obligations will be transferred to the government's Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation.
Eastern Washington University economics professor Doug Orr is convinced there's no Social Security crisis, so nothing needs to be done to save it. Orr says those who hate Social Security are out to gut it, in part to give business a tax cut while dismantling what remains of the social safety net for workers.
I think the larger goal of destroying Social Security is to destroy part of that sense of security for working people in America, which will make them much more at the mercy of their employers.
Orr says higher worker productivity plus economic growth will more than pay for full Social Security benefits for baby boomers. Rescinding the Bush tax cut that Orr says went mostly to the wealthy would strengthen Social Security. Orr believes that privatizing Social Security is part of a larger anti-worker agenda.
This is not an issue that only affects retirement. If they succeed in destroying Social Security, every single worker in the United States, way before retirement, are going to see the unemployment rate going up. They're going to see their wages being pushed down. Gutting Social Security is simply the first step in driving down the living standards of people who work for wages in this country.
More than 600 auto workers protested the outsourcing of their jobs to Mexico outside of Ford Motor Company's corporate headquarters on Friday. United Auto Workers Local 36 organized the protest in part because the company is increasing the new car lines being built in Mexico. The union also believes the company may be planning to shut down its assembly plant in Wixom, Michigan. Since 2002, the plant has lost 55% of its hourly workforce, and production of the Thunderbird will be phased out next year. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The Economic Policy Institute has released a paper that has troubling findings concerning U.S. trade with China over the past 14 years. According to the study, China is gaining an advantage in auto and aerospace industries. Also, China's exports of products that depend on high-skilled labor, such as computers and electronics, are growing faster than its export of low-value labor-intensive items, such as shoes. More than 1.5 million U.S. jobs have been lost because of the China deficit.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Are you tired of progressives spending all their energy on defensive struggles where a victory simply maintains the status quo? We are too, and we're doing something about it.
At ReclaimDemocracy.org, we're taking the initiative to revoke corporate power and restore citizen authority over corporations to enable genuine progress on the many issues that we all care about. Get involved. Visit us online at ReclaimDemocracy.org or call 406-582-1224.
In the wild and woolly world of unbridled commerce, you'll often encounter disgusting life forms that can only be described as sleaze. For example, take the roving band of companies that profit by essentially bilking vulnerable military veterans of their pensions. These financial corporations appeal to vets who face some personal crisis and need quick cash. No problemo, say the financial agents. Just sign over your military pension payments to us for a while and we'll advance you some cash. Only later do these desperate veterans realize that they've been robbed. To get, say, $20,000, they give up $60,000 or more in monthly pension payments, amounting to as high as 75% interest. These schemes are illegal, for the law says that future military pensions cannot be signed away by a retiree. Incredibly, though, the Pentagon sides not with our soldiers, but with the profiteering companies that prey on them, even handling the paperwork to divert the retirees' pay to the corporation. Pentagon officials twist the language of the law, declaring that these are not assignments of retiree pay, which would be illegal, but merely the, quote, collateral for loans taken by retirees. The companies twist the language further, denying that these are even loans. Rather, they say that these deals are straightforward commercial transactions. We are just purchasing a stream of payments, one lawyer said coldly. Even colder, whenever veterans balk at paying the usurious ripoff, company lawyers sue them, usually in courts far away from where the vets live. Financially strapped retirees cannot afford to challenge these companies, so they are losing the cases by default and often having to file for personal bankruptcy. This is Jim Hightower saying, what's bankrupt here is a system that's robbing veterans. Where's Bush? Where's Rumsfeld? Where's Congress? To help battle this outrage, call the National Consumer Law Center, 202-452-6252.
A message from the American Library Association and Bernie Mac about the hard times facing our nation's libraries.
Hey, I'm Bernie Mac, and libraries need your help. Many are forced to cut back hours, reduce services, and even close their doors. So what can you do? I tell you what, support your local library and help keep your library doors open. Contact your local library to find out how you can make a difference in your community. The future is at your library, so make sure your library has a future. Just a little something from the Mac Man.
Brought to you by the Campaign for America's Libraries. For more information, visit the American Library Association website at www.ala.org.
Exposes political corruption and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. TomHartman.com, our website, 1-866-889-8894, the telephone number. Sam Saul in our chat room, listening in Pittsburgh. WPTT, live in Pittsburgh today. Greetings to the fine citizens of that city. Says, let's scroll off the board now, so I'll have to do it from memory. There's a whole bunch of people in there talking. There's a whole bunch of words. Said something to the effect of, if George Bush believes in not creating life just to destroy it, as in the whole stem cell thing, which we will get into in the next hour, then why is he sending soldiers to Iraq to die? That's it. Interesting rhetorical argument. I got an email from Ben in Illinois. He says, a kid came to my door begging just now. Her friend's mom is going to lose her house. And she's going door to door selling beaded keychains to raise money for them. Of course, I contributed. Out in the snow, we are in a Chicago suburb, begging to keep housing. I feel like I'm in a Charles Dickens story. But this is remarkable. Back in March of last year, a reporter for the Arizona Republic by the name of E.J. Montini, he writes a regular column in the Arizona Central is the online version of the paper, azcentral.com. And he talks about a phone call he received. And he says, it begins with the automated voice on my telephone answering machine saying that a call came at 9:37 a.m. on Tuesday, and it lasted 2 minutes, which is the point where the caller's message is automatically cut off. And he talks in his article about how, you know, more of America should hear this. And so I want to share this call from that E.J. Montini received. We don't know who this person was who called him. But it's a message he received on his answering machine. And then I'll share with you the last little bit of his column, and then we'll carry on with our program here. But this call into a columnist for the Arizona newspaper, Arizona Central. And push the right button.
Voice call received 9:37 a.m. Tuesday, March 2nd. 2 minutes. To listen, press 0.
I'm calling in and I'm promising myself not to cry, but Joel's right about things that are going on in the current events. I'm wondering, has anybody noticed in America, all of us that are unemployed? I'm 43 years old and I've been working since I was 16. My husband is 45. We've been married 22 years, and we've always worked. A year ago, I lost my job. 6 months ago, his job was outsourced to India. We have 3 children. One that's 18, and we were going to try to help them get through college. But anyway, I just wonder, there's so many of us, and people don't seem to notice what's going on. And nobody, you see, I read the paper and I don't see a lot of people writing about it. And I know there's a lot of them out there because I talk to my friends every day that I used to work with, and there are no jobs. And it just seems like somebody ought to write that a lot of jobs have gone overseas and there's no jobs in this country for people that have worked all their lives. And, I mean, yesterday I was on the phone looking around for shelters because we've got another 2 months before we're going to get thrown out of our house. And we were part of that middle class section there. This wasn't, I mean, I never thought this was supposed to happen to us. And I know there's a lot of people out there like us. So anyway, it'd be neat if somebody would write and make the country aware that, I mean, I feel like invisible. You go to the grocery store and it's like, anyway, we're an invisible section. But I think there's like millions of us. So anyway, somebody ought to write about it. And you always write about everything and you make it good. And nobody hears us. So
to respond or forward, press 1. To delete, press star D.
And he says, then the machine cuts her off. And an automated voice tells me to respond or forward, press 1, to delete, press star D, to skip, press the pound key. He says, if I could transfer her message to each of you, I would. You can listen to it yourself by typing in newsmultimedia.azcentral.com, and it talks about that. He says, she is what the election in November will be about. Unfortunately, he was wrong. I mean, he wrote this sometime before that. And although she doesn't leave a name and number, I knew when she got cut off and my answering machine was listing my options that I wanted to respond to her message, wanted to forward it, had no intention of deleting it, and could not skip it. E.J. Montini in azcentral.com, the Phoenix newspaper. So strange things are happening in America. The idea that a single wage earner could raise a family and provide all the necessities of life, that to pay for put kids through school, have a retirement when they're finished, have health care, be able to pay the mortgage, be able to take a vacation. All of these traditional ideas, which we defined as the American dream, are very rapidly being redefined as the European dream, because they are still very much alive and well in the European nations, in the Western European nations anyway, but not in America. Our layoff and closing report for today. Roundy's Incorporated has decided to get out of the retail grocery business in West Michigan. They're going to leave 45 employees without jobs. Seattle Times is laying off 90 to 110 people. PhotoWorks, Inc., this in Washington State, says it'll cut 66 employees. From the South Florida Sun Sentinel, Tommy Hilfiger Corp., the clothing manufacturer known for its red, white, and blue logo, is closing its young men's jeans division and cutting 200 jobs across the U.S., across its wholesale division, to trim costs. The job cuts represent about 20% of their salary workers in the United States. In Michigan, this article in the Detroit News business section, Michigan loses jobs rate worst in the nation. Analysts say the state is losing ground as another 15,000 positions are cut. Michigan's jobless rate climbed to 7.3% in December, a new high for the year that could leave the state with the worst unemployment rate in the nation. And what is happening as a result of this? Well, John Armbruster knows what to do about this. John has set up a company in Pakistan. It's called TRG Pakistan Limited. He says, we blow India away as far as quality is concerned. Probably what India has gotten into is it's grown too fast. Company's director of operations. This article in the Los Angeles Times, yesterday, January 23rd, says the Pakistani government, aided by the Bush administration, has launched an aggressive effort to get its economic house in order. The economy grew, they say, an impressive 6.4% last year. The article goes on. So who wrote this thing? Evelyn Iritani is the author of this. Give her credit. Like India, Pakistan has a large number of educated English speakers willing to work for a fraction of U.S. wages. Operating costs are low in line with other parts of South Asia. Last year, investors. Let me pause that sentence right there. Remember George W. Bush saying, you know, we're going to give what turned out to be over $1 trillion, and some suggest well over $2 trillion, actually, over the life of the tax cuts. $2 trillion in tax cuts, more than enough to fix Social Security to the extent that it may need to be fixed, and that's 40 years from now, but that's a whole other thing. We're going to give $2 trillion in tax cuts to those people in America earning over $200,000 a year, especially to those earning over $1 million or over $100 million a year. A couple of trillion, that's a trillion is a thousand billion or $1 million dollars in tax cuts. Now, these, first of all, they weren't really tax cuts because there was no accompanying reduction in spending. So what had to happen was to give this money back to all these rich people. Oh, wait a minute, I got $300. Well, sort of. You got $300, and you don't realize it yet, but you also got a $1,700 bill for that $300. That's how much you're going to have to pay back over a 20-year period. You know, it's like a mortgage. You get a $100,000 mortgage on a house, and over 30 years of the mortgage, how much do you pay back? It ain't $100,000. It can be over $200,000. It depends on the interest rate, of course, and the time period of the loan. But that's the point. These were not tax cuts. These were tax deferrals. The tax that the wealthy in America are not paying this year and last year and the year before as a result of George Bush's tax cuts. And the shift, this dramatic shift that was made last year, and I'm just amazed that this hasn't gotten more press. The shift from taxing people on their earnings, if their earnings take the nature of sitting around on their butts beside the pool waiting for the dividend check to arrive in the mail versus earning their living by, you know, digging ditches, stringing wires for the telephone company, answering telephones, working in the, anything. If you get a paycheck, you pay income taxes. If you make your living sitting around the pool waiting for the dividends to arrive, and there's a fair number of people in America who make their living that way, George W. Bush being one of them, and Dick Cheney and the other multimillionaires in his administration. Most of their income comes from investment income. You pay a maximum income tax now of 15% and no Social Security tax whatsoever on that. This was his third tax cut. And the justification, we were told, was that if we give these rich folks, like the Bush family and the Cheney family and the and Jon Snow, one of the wealthiest guys in the administration, if we give them these multimillionaires tax cuts, they will invest in America. They will build factories and give us jobs. So we should do it. We, the working class, the average people in America, we should be happy that the wealthy folks in America are getting tax cuts so that they will give us jobs, right? Okay. Back to the story from the Los Angeles Times. Last year, investors sank $1.5 billion into the information technology sector in Pakistan. Yes, they did invest those tax cuts in Pakistan and in India and in China. Boosting software exports, the Los Angeles Times says, to $50 million, says Tariq Hakim, chairman of Pakistan's Export Promotion Bureau. Pakistan, he says, has some of the cheapest IT costs in the region. While most of Pakistan sleeps, TRG's spacious office in downtown Lahore is abuzz with telephone operators working for Blasir's clients. The work includes taking messages for Glendale physicians, filling catalog orders for Lego toys, and launching subscription drives for the Los Angeles Times. The marvels of Bushonomics. 20 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
This is Veronique Raskin. I'm the president and founder of the Organic Wine Company. What happened when you, Thomas, gave us a plug, the phone started ringing. The first person said, whatever it is that you're selling, I want to buy it. And for the next few hours, the phone rang nonstop. The people who listen to your program are what they call in the business my target audience, people who are conscious and responsible and try to do the right thing and try to think for themselves. I would encourage anyone to advertise on the Thomas Hartman Show, absolutely, without question, whether that be on the national level or the local level. And you will absolutely get results. The way you can learn more about our imported organically grown wines from France is by calling us. The phone number is 1-888-ECO-WINE, or you can visit our site at www.ecowine.com.
Love guides.
My daughter has a million things going on in her daily life, from softball to bands and voice lessons. My husband and I like to make sure she doesn't spend her idle time idle, because an idle mind is a playground for trouble. You see, occupying our daughter's free time and keeping her active makes us feel confident that she won't be hanging out with the wrong crowds.
Love, the anti-drug. Call 1-800-788-2800 or visit theantidrug.com for information on how to prevent your child from using marijuana. Sponsored by the ONDCP and the Partnership for a Drug-Free America.
Hi, this is Tom Hartman. If you'd like to help bring the Tom Hartman program to a radio station in your area, please let us know. We have tools to help you make that happen. For more information, go to www.tomhartman.com and click on the Bring Tom Show to Your Town link on the left side of the page. Thanks for your help in bringing uncommon sense from the radical middle to your community.
Yeah.
Real novelists don't go to graduate school, they go to prison. Mike Palasek is one of America's newest, most exciting political storytellers. Palasek is a former federal prisoner for peace, county commissioner, city jail prisoner, Iowa Democratic Party candidate for Congress, football co-captain, small-town newspaper reporter, and bakery delivery truck driver. Check out www.iowapeace.com for Mike's books and read his weekly column, Is This Heaven? The View from Iowa. Go to iowapeace.com for ordering information for Twins, Joe Coffey's Revolution, KGB, The Truth, The Last Liberal Outlaw, and Prophets Without Honor. Palasek's books are recommended by Howard Zinn, Danny Schechter, BlueEar.com, The Des Moines Register, and Prisoners Everywhere.
Exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Working in a coal mine, going on down, now working in a coal mine, about to slip down, working in a coal mine, going on down.
And welcome back. Not the best way to make a living, I'll tell you. That's got to be tough, tough work. Welcome back. 24 and a half minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number. Time for a report from Washington, D.C. Victoria Jones with the Talk Radio News Service on the line. Hey, Victoria, what's happening in that beautiful city?
Well, it's a white and beautiful city today. We got quite a bit of snow and we're digging out, so it's just as well that Congress isn't back for a couple of days because it would be difficult for them to get in or out of here.
Mm-hmm.
And we're freezing. So Washington doesn't do too well under this kind of condition. We're a little bit self-absorbed. Many people would be surprised to hear that, but we are.
Yes.
And so we're just trying to cope with our own problems before we start tackling the problems of the rest of the world or perhaps even inflicting them. People also reacting very much to the Washington Post story yesterday about this inside espionage branch inside the Pentagon that to Seymour Hersh referred to in the New Yorker last week, but that is now being given even more ink by the Washington Post and is something that members of Congress are not too happy about, including Senator John McCain. And they're basically saying, what the heck is this?
Yeah, without congressional oversight, without all the normal oversight. For example, there's Title 10 is the law that says the U.S. code that says that the Defense Department cannot deploy troops without the authorization of Congress.
I believe so.
And here Rumsfeld is doing it. He's one of the provisions in this thing. This is really fascinating. Apparently, Rumsfeld has acquired some high-profile folks and has them here. Let me get the exact quote here. I thought this was fascinating. The group has been working with the elite U.S. Special Forces, such as Delta Forces, as well as recruited outside agents, including, quote, notorious figures, end quote, whose, quote, links to the U.S. government would be embarrassing if disclosed, end quote. Has Donald Rumsfeld hired Osama bin Laden?
You gotta wonder, haven't you? You really, I love this. You know, infamous figures. This is just great. This leads to all the ingredients of a second term scandal.
Yeah, I mean, this is remarkable, and it's been going on for 2 years, and nobody knew about it. Congress didn't know about it. Yeah,
which is going to tick off as you know both sides of the aisle.
Yeah,
they do not like being kept in the dark. They don't like. I mean, and particularly since Rumsfeld has testified before different committees about different things, has had every opportunity to come clean, both in public sessions and in private, and clearly has not done. And I'm sure he got signed off on this by the president. I can't say that, but I can say that.
No, I can tell you he was. It was signed off by the president, at least according to today's American Progress, the Progress Report, American Progress Action Fund, you know, Center for American Progress. John Podesta.
So there won't be any consequences for him anyway.
Right. Yeah. Well, it goes back to George W. Bush. In fact, and he's put a guy in charge of this thing, Colonel George Waldrop, who spent his professional life as a mid-level manager at the INS, the Immigration and Naturalization Service, embroiled in scandal in the mid-90s, deceiving a congressional delegation about staffing problems at the Miami International Airport. Almost lost his job over this, refused to allow Congress to look at his email. said he didn't want to expose himself to criminal sanctions. I mean, this is the guy that Rumsfeld has put in charge of this.
He apparently also refers to himself in the third person.
Who's that? GW?
This guy does, Colonel Waldrop. I'm always suspicious of people who refer to themselves as so-and-so. You know, Victoria says this, and Victoria thinks
this. Yes, yes, yes.
Kind of like Denny Crane, you know?
Yeah, or the Queen, we are not amused.
Right. So, no, there's all kinds of alarms going off about this thing.
A vestige from your country. Do you think that Congress is going to... Of course, they're not going to do anything about this, right? It's entirely controlled by Republicans, so there will be no investigation. There'll just be a lot of noise from the Democrats, right?
There may be noise, but I think there'll be some kind of hearings. I think there will be... enough moderate or even conservative Republicans who feel they've been sniffed at and dissed by the administration that I wouldn't be at all surprised if they do have some kind of hearings.
Interesting. This could be the third-rate burglary. I mean, we have 35 now major scandals in the Bush administration so far, any one of which could rise to the level of a felony, of high crime or misdemeanor. This one, though, seems huge. Victoria, thanks for the report today.
Thank you.
Great to hear from you. Victoria Jones of the Talk Radio News Service in Washington, D.C. It's Tom Hartman with you, the Tom Hartman Radio Program, where our talking points come from Jefferson and Madison, not some right-wing think tank or the RNC.
Hank Montenegro of Morganville, New Jersey wrote, "Dear Mr. Oreck, ever since we purchased your 8-pound Oreck XL vacuum, my wife has been in heaven. Recently, she panicked, believing she'd broken the vacuum. I contacted your customer service department, and after a few questions, I was sent a replacement part at no charge. The machine is as good as new. Try my 8-pound Oreck XL risk-free for 30 days. Call 1-800-989-4200. 1-800-989-4200.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
A union for United Airlines has taken their pension battle to the world. Members of the IFPTE, representing maintenance workers for the airline, have begun encouraging Star Alliance Airlines to not benefit from the misery of workers who may be losing their pensions. The Star Alliance is a group of 16 worldwide airlines that share seats and frequent flyer benefits with each other. United Airlines is a member. They have begun handing out pamphlets at airports globally explaining that United Airlines CEO Glenn Tilton secured his own $4.5 million pension right before the airline declared bankruptcy. Under bankruptcy law, $8 billion of the airline's pension obligations will be transferred to the government's Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation.
Eastern Washington University economics professor Doug Orr is convinced there's no Social Security crisis, so nothing needs to be done to save it. Orr says those who hate Social Security are out to gut it, in part to give business a tax cut while dismantling what remains of the social safety net for workers.
I think the larger goal of destroying Social Security is to destroy part of that sense of security for working people in America, which will make them much more at the mercy of their employers.
Orr says higher worker productivity plus economic growth will more than pay for full Social Security benefits for baby boomers. Rescinding the Bush tax cut that Orr says went mostly to the wealthy would strengthen Social Security. Orr believes that privatizing Social Security is part of a larger anti-worker agenda.
This is not an issue that only affects retirement. If they succeed in destroying Social Security, every single worker in the United States, way before retirement, are going to see the unemployment rate going up. They're going to see their wages being pushed down. Gutting Social Security is simply the first step in driving down the living standards of people who work for wages in this country.
More than 600 auto workers protested the outsourcing of their jobs to Mexico outside of Ford Motor Company's corporate headquarters on Friday. United Auto Workers Local 36 organized the protest in part because the company is increasing the new car lines being built in Mexico. The union also believes the company may be planning to shut down its assembly plant in Wixom, Michigan. Since 2002, the plant has lost 55% of its hourly workforce, and production of the Thunderbird will be phased out next year. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The Economic Policy Institute has released a paper that has troubling findings concerning U.S. trade with China over the past 14 years. According to the study, China is gaining an advantage in auto and aerospace industries. Also, China's exports of products that depend on high-skilled labor, such as computers and electronics, are growing faster than its export of low-value labor-intensive items, such as shoes. More than 1.5 million U.S. jobs have been lost because of the China deficit.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
And who's going to be the one to say it was no good what we done? I dare a man to say I'm too young, for I'm going to try for the sun.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Have we now entered the Charles Dickens zone, the Scrooge and Marley, the Christmas Carol era in America? When we literally have people begging in the streets, when we are throwing the poor out, we are abandoning any pretense of holding to the ideals of the old Jewish ideal of tikkun, that you're born into this world with an obligation to heal it, the ideals that Jesus laid out in Matthew 25, that, you know, as you do to the least of these among us, you have done to me. Are we just abandoning that in this headlong rush to the brave new conservative world of I got mine, of an ownership society, where those who own the society? Is this the direction we're going? And it is certainly seeming that way to me. Interesting discussion, by the way. I was just reading in the chat room here whether or not. Is Rick Santorum a metrosexual? Interesting question. Will he run for president in 4 years? Is he going to take on Chuck Hagel, who's going to no doubt try to be the moderate Republican? Time will tell. We've discussed Hagel in the past. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. And Rick in Grand Rapids, Michigan on the line. Hey, Rick, what's on your mind?
Yeah, Tom, I just wanted to let you know, with respect to that story from Washington that the lady just talked to you about.
Yeah. Victoria.
Yeah, I don't know exactly what they call it. This is evidently a secret organization, but the special unit in the Pentagon, is that safe to say?
Yeah.
Well, I did see a scroll at the bottom of the screen yesterday on one of the cable news channels that said that John McCain was indeed planning to hold hearings on this, and I had not heard of the story before this. So I guess we could say one of two things about that. Either McCain is doing this to grandstand to plan for 2008 in case he runs, or maybe he really wants to do this, you know, out of sincerity and decency, but perhaps other people in Washington will persuade him not to. But as of right now, from what I understand, he does plan to hold hearings on it.
Yeah.
And like I was going to say, my last thought, and I'll close. Is that, you know, regardless of party or ideology, there is an institutional jealousy in Washington, and probably should be, about separation of powers. And I would imagine, you know, even Tom DeLay would probably be upset if George Bush hid something from him.
Yeah, I would think so. And here's the larger issue, Rick. When Thomas Jefferson, in the first hour I mentioned, you know, Jefferson getting that letter from Madison,
yes,
with the Constitution, and he sent back saying, you know, here's what I don't like. You don't have a Bill of Rights which calls for a ban on monopolies in commerce. There were actually two things of the list of things that Jefferson gave Madison that he wanted to be in the Bill of Rights. All of them became the Bill of Rights, except for two. And those two things were, number one, the ban on monopoly in commerce, which we talked about in our first hour. And the second was a ban on standing armies during times of peace. He felt that it was appropriate for us to have a navy to defend our shores. But he made the point, and he made it rather eloquently, and he wasn't the only one who was thinking like this. George Washington agreed with him. He made the point that an army during time of peace could only produce mischief.
Yeah.
That it would eventually become its own institution, advocating for itself, and particularly a professional army. He was very, very strongly opposed to any kind of professional army. He felt that the army should be entirely composed of draftees, so that it would always represent a cross-section of America. And it should only be assembled during time of war. And Jefferson's proposal, and he laid this thing out, and he sent it back to everybody, and Madison became an advocate for it. And what he said was, let's create a citizens' militia. And in order to make sure that it won't be misused by Washington, D.C., the power to regulate the militia, to control the militia, will be held at the local level, at the ward or county level. In other words, every citizen's so the person who is, if you're in the citizen's militia there in Michigan, in Kent County, Michigan, whoever's in charge of that county, you know, you guys all get together and you elect somebody or whatever, that person is going to supervise the militia. And every able-bodied man between the ages of 18 and 47 would be a member of the militia and would have a rifle in their house. And if the church bells rang in a certain way, that was the warning that everybody knew was the warning that invasion was happening, then you would grab your gun, step out in front of your house, and boom, you've got an army. You've got a citizen's army. This is how it is right now, today, in Switzerland. And this right. is, many people speculate that this is why Hitler did not invade Switzerland, because every man in the country is part of the army. And who wants to take that on? And Jefferson laid this thing out. And he said, this is what we have to have. This is not a professional military, not a professional. And in fact, when Jefferson became president in 1800, there were over 300,000 men in the army. And when he left in 1806, he had it down to about 3,000. I mean, he'd cut it down to about 1% of what it originally was. He took some heat for that, by the way, as a result of, you know, his cutting away the army. The War of 1812 was a little dicier for us. So you could argue it both ways. But the point is, he didn't get the citizens' militia he wanted. Instead, they worked out this compromise where they said that a state can have a militia, essentially, but that there won't be any kind of federal oversight or regulation of them. And so they threw out the second half of it, and we ended up with just the first sentence of the two sentences that were designed initially to create the militia. And that sentence is, a well-regulated militia be necessary to the security of a free state. The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. That's the Second Amendment.
So it has nothing to do with individuals, then?
No. The Second Amendment was not created so that people could have guns and overthrow the government if the government ever became oppressive. If it was meant to say that, it would have authorized people to own cannons, to own warships, because that's what it would take to overthrow a country.
Not only that, but it would be pretty silly for people who were just founding a country to propose ways for the citizenry to dismantle that very government.
Yeah, exactly. Well, yes and no. I mean, keep in mind, these guys were revolutionaries.
Well, they wanted to set up their own government.
Though. Right, but they had just dismantled a government. And that's the argument.
Well, Great Britain's colony. Yeah.
Exactly, yeah, but it was imposed on them. But the point is that the Second Amendment was all about creating a citizen's militia. That's why it starts out.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Exactly. And these guys were very, very, very wary of the military, and that's why they put the military under the control of civilians. The commander-in-chief of the military is the president of the United States, a civilian. And the control of the military rests with Congress. And it's against the law for the military, for the Department of Defense, to send any soldiers anywhere in the world without the express authorization of Congress.
Of course, we know that's not true anymore.
Well, it is true.
By law, it's not allowed, but they do it anyway.
Well, this is what everybody's upset about. Actually, it's not the military that's been doing it, it's the CIA. I mean, we created a special law that said that the CIA can send people out and spy on them, and that's fine as long as they have the oversight of Congress. That's through the Intelligence Committee, which can meet in private. That's our spying division. But when the military starts spying, and particularly if that spying should become domestic, then that nightmare that Thomas Jefferson had of a military that could grow so strong, this was his big point, that someday the military may grow so strong that it represented a threat to the nation itself. You know, the point that they made, many of the founders repeatedly, was that history showed that governments fell from within as a result of their military taking over. They were concerned about military coups.
Do you think this is actually a power play of the Pentagon and the CIA, though?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Who's the good guy in this scenario?
Well, there isn't one. I mean, the bad guy is Rumsfeld and Bush. They signed off on this thing, and it'll be interesting to see if Porter Goss goes along with it. I suspect he will. He's a good team player. But I don't think that George Tenet would have, and I don't think that any of the previous heads of the CIA, including George Herbert Walker Bush, would go along with it, because it's unconstitutional, and it's a violation of the principles of this nation.
Makes you wonder why Daddy doesn't have a talk with Junior and straighten him out a little bit here.
Yeah, well, people have been wondering about that for a long, long time. A long time. Rick, I got to move along. Thanks for the call, though. Good to hear from you. It's just, this is mind-boggling. This is just absolutely mind-boggling. And the secret intelligence group headed up by Lieutenant Colonel George Waldrop, a guy who refers to himself in the third person as GW. He calls himself GW. So he says, somebody says, well, what do you think about this? And he says, well, GW thinks that in some circles, this is a sign of mental illness. Waldrop, when district director for external affairs, assistant district director for external affairs, helped orchestrate a temporary doubling of immigration screeners on the day of a visit to the Miami International Airport. This is when he was a mid-level manager with the INS. Instructed subordinates not to discuss staff shortages and physically confronted a union leader to prevent him from reaching members of Congress. During the investigation, he then, quote, refused to disclose the password to his email files, refused to sign an affidavit summarizing his testimony, and in a subsequent interview stated that he would not answer any questions because, quote, he wished to protect himself from exposure to criminal sanctions. This is called the Strategic Support Branch, and it operated well below congressional radar. The group was set up using funds siphoned off from other Pentagon projects, quote, without explicit congressional authority or appropriation, end quote. The Washington Post reported two longtime members of the House Intelligence Committee were unaware of any details surrounding the group. And on CBS's Face the Nation, Senator John McCain, a member of the Senate Armed Services Committee, called yesterday for hearings to investigate this. So we'll see where this is going to go. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Let's go back to the phones. Roy in Rio Rancho, New Mexico, isn't it?
You bet. Good morning, Tom.
Hey, Roy. Good morning.
I wish I'd have made this observation myself, but I picked it up yesterday on C-SPAN somewhere. You know, the foundation of the Constitution was for the civilians to be in control of the military.
Right.
But the leaks coming out of the military to expose this stuff, this is one of the few times that the military is controlling the civilians.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there,
because it's just so out of hand.
Yeah. I mean, the reality is that the vast majority, I was going to say virtually all, I don't know that that's a fact, but I can tell you that the majority of I'm not even sure that there's a lot, let's say, of retired senior officers. I once saw a list of them, and my recollection is that it's like something like 60-70% of all the one-star general and above retired officers right now were opposed to the war in Iraq, and many of them very outspokenly. And Bush was getting rid of these guys, you know, when they were speaking against the war. And I mean, he's got Tommy Franks with him, but that's about it. There are many people in the United States military who, like Eisenhower, like Colin Powell, have seen war, have seen what war does, have seen people die on the battlefield, understand how horrific it is, and really and truly believe, even though they're in the business of blowing things up and killing people, really and truly believe that it should be the very last resort.
Last thing.
It's the thing that you do when absolutely every other option is exhausted, and that is absolutely not what we did in the case of Iraq. And now we have some 1,300 plus soldiers dead. And
I might be a little naive, but I can't help but think that the higher military officers love this country so much they don't want this bunch taking it over the way they're taking it over.
This is kind of like
the 7 days in May where, you know, there was so many conflicts where they were going to take it over because they were destroying the country. You know that kind of thing. But it's just it's spooky.
Yeah, the true conservatives are starting to come out, and they're starting to come out and speak loudly in opposition to what's going on here. You know,
so,
from Pat Buchanan to folks in the military. Roy, thanks for the call. Great.
Have a good one.
I appreciate it. You too. Oh my, Rumsfeld's dirty little secret. How is it going to go? How's it going to continue? Who knows? Not only did they violate Title 10. They also violated Title 50 of the U.S. Code, which is a law that says that Congress does not have to be informed about traditional military activities and routine support. In other words, anything you do that's out of the normal, you got to let Congress know about. And so what they did was Rumsfeld rewrote the actions of this thing. The Pentagon's General Counsel simply expanded the definition of traditional and routine to include this new spy agency that Rumsfeld created 2 years ago inside the Pentagon. Do you believe this? Jennifer from North Mississippi on the line, 1-866-889-8894, our number. Hey, Jennifer.
Hi, how are you doing?
I am great, but I'll get better. How about you?
Oh, I'm working in the same direction you are.
Great. What's up?
I had 2 points. First, I thought it really interesting at the pro-life rally this weekend when President Bush addressed the crowd through the, I believe it was over the telephone he did it, but he said it was the duty of the strongest to protect the weakest in our society. And I thought that was interesting because it is so contrary to how this administration treats the general population of the
country. Right.
Well,
it only applies to the weakest before they're born. After they're born, they're on their own.
My second point was, wasn't Rumsfeld investigated by Congress for very similar activities during the Iran-Contra affair? And are we going to see this colonel that is in charge of this group on Fox News in 20 years as a commentator like we have Ollie North?
Oh,
I'm cynical.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me. The thing about Rumsfeld's career, frankly, I don't know if Rumsfeld was investigated during Iran-Contra or not. I do know that Don Rumsfeld, when he was in the Ford administration, after Nixon had negotiated detente with the Soviet Union, and this was a big deal in 72. Nixon came back from his meetings with, who was it at that time? Was it Brezhnev or was it still Khrushchev? In any case, Nixon came back and him and Kissinger had come up with this thing of detente, and he gave this speech and he said, "The era of fear is over." And he, you know, and it's over. It's the end of it. And this is really a marvelous thing. He was saying the Cold War is over. We're no longer going to be threatening each other with nuclear weapons. You know, yes, the Vietnam War is still going on. Yes, we have conflicts, but the era of fear is over. And they really and truly meant it. And
but
so Don, well, let me finish the story, Jennifer. So Don Rumsfeld starts coming out. He's after Nixon gets impeached, right? 2 years later, Nixon gets impeached. And Rumsfeld is now the, I believe he was the Secretary of Defense in the Ford administration, a senior administration official. And he starts saying, the Soviets have secret weapons of mass destruction. They've got a way of detecting our submarines that is undetectable. It goes beyond sonar. They've got this weapon. They got that weapon. He comes up with this whole bunch of things. And the Pentagon and the CIA both come out and publicly say there's no evidence to back up what Don Rumsfeld is saying. And Rumsfeld publicly says, see, I told you so. That's proof that they're there. You can't find them. Therefore, they must be super effective. And that led to Star Wars and to this explosion in military spending that ran right into the Reagan era. And then Rumsfeld, of course, went to work as a lobbyist for the defense industry. So go figure.
I don't know.
Yeah, well, I do. I think it's pretty grim. Jennifer, thanks for the call.
Thank you. Great
to hear from you. I appreciate your listening. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, exposing the con in conservative.
Attention, Tom Hartman listeners. I'm here with Brush Lintball.
This is the old Brush Show, Brush Lintball.
To tell you about DemocraticMatch.com. You're listening to Tom Hartman because you're intelligent, progressive, and like the thousands of members at DemocraticMatch.com, you don't drink right-wing Kool-Aid. Right, Brush?
Right-wing wackos are fine to laugh at on all their radio programs, but no one wants to date one, right?
DemocraticMatch.com is a dating site made specifically for Democrats and other progressive individuals who want to date those with similar worldviews. What do you think of Democrats these days, Brush?
Democrats are smarter. Democrats are more evolved. Democrats are more fun. Democrats make better lovers. Democrats have better hearts.
This is your chance to meet other liberals who listen to Tom Hartman, people who cherish the principles of our democracy, believe in a woman's right to choose, believe in protecting our incredible planet. In short, DemocraticMatch.com gives you the opportunity to meet a real soulmate. So what have you got to lose? Sign up today at DemocraticMatch.com.
Bonjour, my name is Véronique Raskin. I founded the Organic Wine Company 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious. When turned into wine, you can really taste the difference with every sip. So our wines are delicious and eco-friendly. So I want to make it easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you three of my favorite organically grown French wines at half off the regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. Isn't that magnifique? I think so. If you don't share my enthusiasm, I'll gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me at 1-888-ECO-WINE. ECOWINE. Au revoir.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555. And mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
Overfishing off the shores of West Africa leads to overhunting of wildlife on land. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. People in West Africa have relied on fishing to put protein in their diets and money in their pocketbooks. But the fisheries off the African coast have been severely depleted. A recent report says the loss of fish at sea has serious consequences for wildlife on land. Justin Brashears is a wildlife ecologist at the University of California in Berkeley. He studied the rise and fall of fish stocks off the coast of Ghana during the past 30 years. He says the fish have been hammered. Brashears says some overfishing can be blamed on small-scale and large-scale operations that are based in Ghana, but more serious problems involve mechanized fleets that carry away huge amounts of fish for processing in Europe. Brashears says people in Ghana have turned to hunting because they don't have fish to eat or sell. Some of the hunting is illegal poaching inside game reserves, and a lot of it is simply unregulated. Brashears says the hunting has become as serious as the overfishing.
The kinds of species that we see declining most are certainly the large carnivores, so things like lion and hyena and leopard, and then many primates like black and white colobus monkeys, and certainly chimpanzees, and then several large, great herbivores like the elephant and hippopotamus. And so these are some of the larger mammals that seem to be struck most powerfully by this trade in wildlife, this consumption of wildlife.
Brashears says the best way to protect those animals is to provide people with other sources of food and to do a better job of managing the commercial fishery. His report was published in November in the journal Science. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
We ain't asking you to love us. You may place yourself high above us. Mr. President, get it on the working man.
And welcome back. 5 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. Our program brought to you today by Small Dog Electronics. 1-800-511-MAX, M-A-C-S, for all things Macintosh and any other kind of computer. They handle Windows computers as well. New, used, repairs, all sorts of incredible things. Smalldog.com, the website, 1-800-511-MACS for Small Dog Electronics. Gene in Hillsboro, Oregon is on the line. Hey, Gene, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. I realize this is a little bit of a diversion from what you've been talking about. Since I've tuned in this hour, I sent you an article from the Independent on the web, which is this UK paper, about the countdown. It's articles entitled "The Countdown to Global Catastrophe." They're talking about global warming and.
Yeah, I've got it in my stack for the next hour. I was going to talk about it.
Yeah, it's everything else that you talk about is really important, but this whole thing kind of renders the environmental thing kind of renders the whole thing academic. I mean, we either got to fight this guy or resist this guy.
Yeah.
Or I think we're looking at kind of extinction. So.
Well, that's what the head of the IPCC, the International Environmental, Climate Body, just said. We are looking at the possibility of extinction, and it's a pretty dramatic thing. Yeah, I will be getting into that in the next hour of the program.
Okay, well, I just thought I'd point that out, and you're doing a great job. Wish you were on the radio station here in Portland, but can't have everybody on there. It'd be no 48 hours a day.
All righty. Gene, thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. I appreciate it. We will get into that. I just want to wrap this thing up with Rumsfeld. It is so important that we understand. This is why I actually believe we should have a draft. Because if there was a draft today, we would be out of Iraq tomorrow. I mean, it's just very, very simple. If the Army represents an accurate and real cross-section of America, not a draft like during the Civil War when rich people could hire poor people to stand in for them. Not a draft like during Vietnam when folks like George W. Bush could get his daddy to call a friend to call a friend to jump him to the front of the line of the Texas Air National Guard. But a real everybody-has-to-serve draft. Then Americans would be, I think, much more reserved about saying we are going to go out and change the face of every government on the face of the earth. It's the Bush Doctrine will be seen as the radical, radical departure that it is from George Washington's warning in his farewell address against foreign entanglements and the dangers and the potential for corruption domestically that they produce.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem, free, 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
A union for United Airlines has taken their pension battle to the world. Members of the IFPTE, representing maintenance workers for the airline, have begun encouraging Star Alliance Airlines to not benefit from the misery of workers who may be losing their pensions. The Star Alliance is a group of 16 worldwide airlines that share seats and frequent flyer benefits with each other. United Airlines is a member. They have begun handing out pamphlets at airports globally explaining that United Airlines CEO Glenn Tilton secured his own $4.5 million pension right before the airline declared bankruptcy. Under bankruptcy law, $8 billion of the airline's pension obligations will be transferred to the government's Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation.
Eastern Washington University economics professor Doug Orr is convinced there's no Social Security crisis, so nothing needs to be done to save it. Orr says those who hate Social Security are out to gut it, in part to give business a tax cut while dismantling what remains of the social safety net for workers.
I think the larger goal of destroying Social Security is to destroy part of that sense of security for working people in America, which will make them much more at the mercy of their employers.
Orr says higher worker productivity plus economic growth will more than pay for full Social Security benefits for baby boomers. Rescinding the Bush tax cut that Orr says went mostly to the wealthy would strengthen Social Security. Orr believes that privatizing Social Security is part of a larger anti-worker agenda.
This is not an issue that only affects retirement. If they succeed in destroying Social Security, every single worker in the United States, way before retirement, are going to see the unemployment rate going up. They're going to see their wages being pushed down. Gutting Social Security is simply the first step in driving down the living standards of people who work for wages in this country.
More than 600 auto workers protested the outsourcing of their jobs to Mexico outside of Ford Motor Company's corporate headquarters on Friday. United Auto Workers Local 36 organized the protest in part because the company is increasing the new car lines being built in Mexico. The union also believes the company may be planning to shut down its assembly plant in Wixom, Michigan. Since 2002, the plant has lost 55% of its hourly workforce, and production of the Thunderbird will be phased out next year. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The Economic Policy Institute has released a paper that has troubling findings concerning U.S. trade with China over the past 14 years. According to the study, China is gaining an advantage in auto and aerospace industries. Also, China's exports of products that depend on high-skilled labor, such as computers and electronics, are growing faster than its export of low-value labor-intensive items, such as shoes. More than 1.5 million U.S. jobs have been lost because of the China deficit.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Are you tired of progressives spending all their energy on defensive struggles where victory simply maintains the status quo? We are too, and we're doing something about it. At ReclaimDemocracy.org, we're taking the initiative to revoke corporate power and restore citizen authority over corporations to enable genuine progress on the many issues that we all care about. Get involved. Visit us online at ReclaimDemocracy.org or call 406-582-1224.
Gosh, it's sad that the Bushites have not been able to provide protective armor for all of our troops in Iraq, resulting in untold numbers of needless deaths and maimings. But, well, the Pentagon has other priorities, such as playing with its Star Wars toys. There recently was another test to this boondoggle. The scheme is that the military industry can build a whiz-bang technological wonder that will allow a U.S. missile to be fired at an incoming enemy missile and shoot it out of the air. So far, the Pentagon has shoveled $80 billion into this smoke and mirrors stunt, with another $50 billion to be thrown at it in the next 5 years. I say smoke and mirrors because it doesn't work, and nearly all independent experts say it won't ever work, and it isn't even needed. Indeed, the Pentagon even rigged its previous tests, including putting beacons on the target missile so their Star Wars missile can find it easily, yet it still doesn't hit the target. The latest test was especially embarrassing. Instead of merely missing the target, this one couldn't even get off the ground. Pentagon Chief Donnie Rumsfeld, however, is undeterred, saying that critics who claim that his pet project doesn't work are misguided because, quote, what the definition of work is terribly important. Okay, Donnie, try this small dose of reality. Your system is so flawed that it cannot be fired if the weather is bad. Excuse my skepticism, but it's at least possible that an enemy might not wait for a perfectly clear, calm day to take a shot at us. This is Jim Hightower saying, the main thing that the Bushites' highly touted missile defense system can be counted on to hit is the federal budget. But they don't care, for it's all being deficit financed, paid in IOUs that our grandchildren will have to pay. Long after the Bushites are gone and their Star Wars scam has been assigned to the scrap heap of ridiculous waste, is there no other need in America that we could spend this money on?
A message from the American Library Association and Bernie Mac about the hard times facing our nation's libraries.
Hey, I'm Bernie Mac. The libraries need your help. Many are forced to cut back hours, reduce services, and even close their doors. So what can you do? I tell you what. Support your local library and help keep your library doors open. Contact your local library to find out how you can make a difference in your community. The future is at your library, so make sure your library has a future. Just a little something from the Mac Man.
Brought to you by the Campaign for America's Libraries. For more information, visit the American Library Association website at www.ala.org.
And radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends.
Thomas Jefferson alert. Yes, Thomas Jefferson has been sighted. Well, his tracks, anyway. We had fresh snow yesterday. We're up to probably, we didn't get the, here in the People's Republic of Vermont, at least I'm up in the middle part of Vermont, so we're about 3 hours north of Boston, about 2 hours south of Montreal. And the storm passed to the south of us. It whacked Boston really hard. We only got a few inches of snow. But there was fresh snow last night, and this morning there are little mouse tracks, complete with little tail tracks. You can see his tail dragging between the tracks all over, just outside the studio window here, all over in the snow, going up to the rock ledge that goes up the side of the, we're on the side of a hill that goes up about 180 feet up above the house. And it's just remarkable. Or up the side of the building here. So the mouse is out, and no sign of George the cat. George the third, the cat. So we'll see. So that's for those who have, in our chat room, we get these regular inquiries about, you know, how's the mouse doing? For a while there, he would just sit right outside the window and nibble on things and totally distract me while I'm on the air. You know, just... crank up all that attention deficit disorder stuff. Oh, it's a mouse! Look at, he's the cutest little thing. Great big ears. I don't know what kind of mouse that is, but it's a cute mouse. Anyhow, there was a meeting in Washington, D.C. that just wrapped up of the Progressive Democrats of America. Or is it for America, Steve?
Progressive Democrats of America.
Of America.
PDAmerica.org.
Okay, PDAmerica.org. And Steve Behrman, who is often on this program as Swami Beyond Ananda, his website, wakeuplaughing.com, was there. And you were there and participated, and you have a report on what happened. This is, I think the PDAmerica.org represents one of the real up-and-coming possibilities in terms of organizations for the United States. And tell us who was there and what was said.
Well, first of all, something that I didn't know is that this was a group that's an inside-outside group, political insiders in Washington, D.C. and around the country who've been active in the Democratic Party. David Cobb, who's the Green Party candidate for president and who stood up in Ohio and other places to bring suit for against voting fraud and for voting rights. David Cobb was visible there. He was on a number of panels. And so this is very clearly a way of bringing together progressives across party lines. There's, you know, it's not specifically for the Democratic Party, although this group was on the ground physically in John Conyers' office to encourage him to bring the judicial, bring this investigation in front of the Judicial Committee. So
right.
While there were
just
many
voter
people
investigation in Ohio, the investigation.
That's right. In Ohio. And while there were many people who sent emails and wrote letters and made phone calls, all of which are very valuable, one of the things that made a difference was to have people physically show up in Representative Conyers' office and indicate that there were all over the country who were concerned about this issue, and that there would be support on the ground for bringing this issue.
We also had John Conyers on this program, boy, did we get calls on that from all over the country. Support. This was back before he had started the investigation in Ohio, saying, you know, go in there, find out what's going on. There's something stinks in that state.
Well, that's not surprising. And again, the same thing happened with Barbara Boxer. I live in California, and one of the people from our group went to Barbara Boxer's office, and she said, show me the numbers. And in other words, to create the support on the ground, and then to have people who are willing to stick their necks out and stand up, and, you know, as Barbara was, and of course, you know, being isolated and being called everything in the book. So the hopeful thing is that this group does have ways of working within the Democratic Party and activating the Democratic grassroots movement. And right now it seems that they're at what came out of this meeting, and it wasn't really in the presentation, but it was in the caucus that occurred last night, which I just found out about and interviewed people. Really what they decided is that the two focal points that they were going to have is voting rights and incidentally Reverend Jesse Jackson Jr., Representative Illinois Representative Jesse Jackson Jr. Was at the was on one of the panels, and he spoke about, rather than focusing quite so much on programs, to focus on a constitutional amendment that would be called the Right to Vote Amendment.
Yeah, well, this has been the thing that he rode to Congress. I mean, this is the horse that he's been riding for years, years and years and years. He wrote a book about this.
That's correct. Yeah. Yes, indeed. And, you know, maybe it's time. Maybe people are going to start noticing this horse going by.
Well, see, the thing is, I think most people, I would bet you, Steve, that the vast majority of Americans right now, I'll bet if you did a good national poll, you would discover that probably 95% of Americans do not realize that when George Bush sued Al Gore to stop the recount in Florida so that he could become certified as president of the United States in 2000, and the Supreme Court in a 5-4 decision granted that and stopped the recount, the justification that they used for ignoring the possibility that the voters of Florida might have voted in for Al Gore instead of George Bush, which, you know, the later recount actually determined that Gore actually got more votes than Bush, and didn't come out until November 12th of 2001. It was in the New York Times at that time and other newspapers all across the United States. But anyhow, their rationale for saying, well, it really doesn't matter who won the vote, is that in Bush v. Gore, the Supreme Court of the United States determined that there is no constitutional right to vote for president of the United States in the Constitution. Yet you have constitutional rights to vote for other parties and other offices, or for other offices and other positions, but not for president. For president, only the electors have a constitutional right to vote. And the states have the right to determine how those electors will be selected. And it can be by popular vote, or it can be by some other method. And so it's going to require a constitutional amendment to change that, because it's built into the Constitution, the whole electoral system. So there you go. I mean,
that's correct. And that's exactly the tactic that they're taking, and letting people know. And it, of course, it's a massive educational program because of the ongoing stupidization program being conducted by our mass media.
There you go. Well, like I said, I'll bet 95% of Americans do not know that the Supreme Court said you don't have the right to vote for president. Sorry.
Yeah. That's right. So. Yes, the electors.
Yeah.
And so voting reform, and again, David Cobb, the Green Party candidate for president, was there, and he made a very good case, as did many of the other people, for across-the-board voting reform, including an amendment which would essentially bring about instant runoff voting, so that there could be broader spectrum of views in the elections, and elimination
and
of the
now, there was a
college
second
or modification of the Electoral College. So you know, this is a it's an issue. One of the things that Jesse Jackson Jr. was saying is that, you know, we tend to be responding reacting to the initiatives of the Republican Party, in this particular cadre of the Republican Party, and you know, where they are very very strategic. They think long term, and you know, they're going, you know, they were talking about metaphorically the anti-gay marriage constitutional amendment, and if there can be a amendment to ban, to take away our rights, to ban gay marriage.
Yeah. Then certainly we can have an amendment to give us rights, to give us the right to vote. Now, the other thing that you said that there was two issues that they decided that they're going to stand on. The first is the right to vote. The second was to oppose the war in Iraq specifically, was it not?
Exactly.
Okay. That I think it may well be a dead deal within a few months, because I suspect that as soon as he can practically do it, George W. is going to declare victory and leave. Although, you know, we'll see.
Now, what about the basis that we have there? What about
these 14
the report
bases?
That we've built 14?
Well,
new
we
bases
had,
in Iraq.
The whole reason why Osama bin Laden said that he had attacked the United States on 9/11 was because we had a base, because we had soldiers in Saudi Arabia in the Holy Land. Now, having bases in Iraq won't inflame Osama like being in Saudi Arabia, which he considers absolutely untouchable by infidels. He was upset that women were there and that men were drinking alcohol there, you know, U.S. soldiers. But we have bases all over the world. We have bases in 120 nations. So having bases in a country is, I suspect, going to be a lot less objectionable to many people, if not most people, than fighting a war. And so, you know, I have a feeling because, you know, we are going to basically what we're going to do is you've got Alawi, who we now know has executed. You know, he walked into a police station a few months ago and just took a pistol and shot six prisoners in the head to show the police how to do things. We're replacing one Saddam with another Saddam, basically. You know, we're going to replace a strong man with another strong man. And it might be a Shiite strong man, but it'll probably be a secular government. And it's going to operate with our sanction, and we're going to keep getting the oil. And that's really the bottom line, is keep getting the oil.
Right. And as long as that's the case, don't you imagine that there is going to be a continued insurgency, and somebody is going to have to be the bottom line on that. That's probably going to be us.
Could be. Could be. I'm more inclined to guess that we are going to step back, let the civil war happen. I mean, it's amazing. Here's what causes me to think this, Steve, that we'll step back and let this sort of thing happen, let a civil war go down. Look at what we've done in Afghanistan. In Afghanistan right now, George Bush is running around. And again, if you were asked, the majority of Americans, probably 90% of Americans, believe everything is wonderful in Afghanistan. Huh. And George Bush is running around saying, you know, we've freed these people. Karzai in Afghanistan doesn't even control the entire city of Kabul, much less the countryside. The Afghanistan has become the number one narco-terrorist state in the world.
Yeah,
in
they
the
didn't
world.
Call George Bush Sr. Poppy for nothing.
Right. There you go. There you go. I mean, they are produced. They just had the largest opium poppy crop in the history of the planet as a result of the amount of heroin that Afghanistan is exporting. A dose of heroin now in the streets of Europe is down to $3 or $4 a hit. It used to be $10-$20 a hit, and this is causing an explosion in the use of heroin across Europe, which is further upsetting the European nations about our policies with regard to this. And we're doing nothing about it. We're doing nothing about it because Bush, you know, why have a fight about that if the American people don't realize it's going on? I mean, you know, it's just no big deal. And I'm convinced that they're going to figure out a way to put a fig leaf over this thing in Iraq. And yes, the Sunnis will be fighting the Shia, and yes, the Kurds are going to more or less have their own autonomous state. But as long as they keep pumping the oil to us, just like, you know, Karzai is now building that pipeline, across Afghanistan that Cheney had gone over to negotiate some time ago, you know, back, you know, in the 8 years ago. And now it's happening. So I just don't think it's going to be a problem. Anyhow, Steve Behrman, thanks a lot. Swami Beyondananda, wakeuplaughing.com. Thanks for the report from the Progressive Democrats of America meeting, pdamerica.com. Do appreciate it, Steve.
And thank you, Tom.
We'll talk to you soon.
Bye.
Bye. It's 20 minutes past the hour. It's a Tom Hartman radio program discussing solutions and not false promises.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Bonjour, my name is Michel, and I founded the Organic Wine Company with my sister 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines yet, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious that when turned into wine, you can really taste the difference. Our wines are delicious and eco-friendly. So I want to make it very easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you three of my favorite organic French wines at half their regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. C'est magnifique! And if you don't agree, I will gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE, which is ECOWINE. Au revoir!
Love rules.
Our son gets mad. He tries to shout.
We'll take away his cell phone, his video game.
And if we have to, we'll take away his freedom.
He's got to understand that there will be consequences for breaking our rules.
It doesn't matter that he's not smoking. When we say not to hang out with the weed crowd,
we mean it.
That's what it takes to keep him away from marijuana.
And we love him enough to live with that.
Love, the anti-drug. Call 1-800-788-2800 or visit theantidrug.com for information on how to prevent your child from using marijuana. Sponsored Drug-Free America.
Do you have a child with ADHD who is misunderstood, unhappy, and dissatisfied with school? Are you ready for an educational change and for your child to like school again? Consider The Hunter School, a residential K-8 school specializing in the education of children with ADHD, hunters in a farmer's world. Hunter School appreciates and honors the uniqueness of each student while building upon his inherent strengths and abilities. For more information, find us on the web at hunterschool.org.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
They never stop thinking about new ways to harm our country and our people, and neither do we.
This is an impressive crowd, the haves and the have-mores. Some people call you the elite. I call you my base.
You gave them the old razzle-dazzle. You razzle-dazzled them.
Oh, he sure did. Welcome back. 24 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman with you. 1-866-889-8894. Telephone number. It's the True People's Radio. A few interesting news stories here in the science news realm. First is all human embryonic, this is from the Los Angeles Times, today's paper, all human embryonic stem cell lines approved for use in federally funded research. Now, remember this, George W. Bush was confronted with this horrible choice. Shall he allow research to go forward on human embryonic stem cells that may save lives? Or should he pander to the anti-abortion fanatics? And by the word fanatic there, I want to make it very clear. I don't consider all people who are opposed to abortion fanatics. But there is this small group who consider any form of contraception to be equally immoral. And now the Vatican has just confirmed their stand that they are opposed to the use of condoms. Keep in mind, in the United States, it was illegal to own birth for married couples. I mean, this was the Griswold case in Connecticut in, as I recall, 1964, that a married couple was arrested for having condoms in their home. I mean, it was against the law and prosecuted. Of course, it was a test case, to try to see if this thing legitimate, but. Anyhow, there is this very intense fringe out there. And when you understand how stem cells are, how they come about, it makes you realize that the folks who are opposed to stem cell research really are the fringe. Here's how it works. If you've got a man and woman who want to have a baby and they can't conceive, and usually the vast majority of the time they can't conceive is because the woman's fallopian tubes are scarred. And the ovaries have the eggs and they have to make their way down the fallopian tube into the uterus. And the fallopian tube actually is where the egg gets fertilized, those of you who didn't take sex ed. And so And the scarring of the fallopian tubes is a real common thing among women, particularly women in their 20s, you know, well into their 20s and into their early 30s, usually as a result of infections, things like chlamydia and whatnot. These fairly common sexually transmitted infections, and sometimes not even sexually transmitted. So, I mean, there are bacteria that, people get from jacuzzis and pools and God only knows what else. And so in any case, you've got women who have scarred fallopian tubes and they can't conceive, but they do have good eggs and they do have a functioning uterus. So what they do is they take a 6-inch long needle and they put it through the stomach into the ovaries and draw out a few million eggs. Now keep in mind, I mean, it's like when you buy a capsule of lactobacillus, you know, intestinal bacteria, lactobacillus for your stomach, you know, the good bacteria for your stomach. One little capsule will have like a billion bacteria. These things are really small. And the eggs are not equally small, but very small also. I mean, they're microscopic. So just a little tiny bit of fluid, a few drops of fluid can be a million eggs or hundreds of thousands of eggs. So they draw out these eggs. They put them in a petri dish. They take some of the father's sperm. They mix them all up. Now you've got millions of fertilized eggs. They pick out one that looks good and they plant it into the womb and boom, you've got a baby. But now you've got a whole bunch of fertilized eggs in this petri dish. What are you going to do with them? Well, typically they throw them away. And so scientists came along and said, hey, we can use these things for stem cell research. You don't grow them into a fetus or anything. I mean, you just, you know, you grow it to maybe 8 or 12 or 24 cells and that's where it stops. They said, we can use this for stem cell research. And you got these folks saying, no, you can't do that. That's killing a human life. Well, otherwise, the petri dish is going to get thrown out. So anyhow, now we discover that all of the human embryonic stem cell lines approved for use in federally funded research are contaminated with a foreign molecule from mice that may make them risk to a study released Sunday. If they were transplanted into people, these mouse cells that have contaminated them would provoke our immune systems to attack them. Now, keep in mind now, they have successfully used stem cells to treat both Parkinson's and spinal cord injuries outside the United States. There's a tremendous potential here. So what's Bush going to do now? The only ones he's approved are contaminated. Stay tuned. 29 minutes past the hour.
Love rules.
Our son gets mad. He tries to shout.
We'll take away his cell phone, his video game.
And if we have to, we'll take away his freedom.
He's got to understand that there will be consequences for breaking our rules.
It doesn't matter that he's not smoking. When we say not to hang out with the weed crowd,
we mean it.
That's what it takes to keep him away from marijuana.
And we love him enough to live with that.
Love, the anti-drug. Call 1-800-788-2800 or visit theantidrug.com for information on how to prevent your child from using marijuana.
Paid for by ONDCP.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
A union for United Airlines has taken their pension battle to the world. Members of the IFPTE, representing maintenance workers for the airline, have begun encouraging Star Alliance Airlines to not benefit from the misery of workers who may be losing their pensions. The Star Alliance is a group of 16 worldwide airlines that share seats and frequent flyer benefits with each other. United Airlines is a member. They have begun handing out pamphlets at airports globally, explaining that United Airlines CEO Glenn Tilton secured his own $4.5 million pension right before the airline declared bankruptcy. Under bankruptcy law, $8 billion of the airline's pension obligations will be transferred to the government's Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation.
Eastern Washington University economics professor Doug Orr is convinced there's no Social Security crisis, so nothing needs to be done to save it. Orr says those who hate Social Security are out to gut part to give business a tax cut while dismantling what...
Social Security is to destroy part of that sense of security for working people in America, which will make them much more at the mercy of their employers.
Orr says higher worker productivity plus economic growth will more than pay for full Social Security benefits for baby boomers. Rescinding the Bush tax cut that Orr says went mostly to the wealthy would strengthen Social Security. Orr believes that privatizing Social Security is part of a larger anti-worker agenda.
This is not an issue that only affects retirement. If they succeed in destroying Social Security, every single worker in the United States, way before retirement, are going to see the unemployment rate going up. They're going to see their wages being pushed down. Gutting Social Security is simply the first step in driving down the living standards of people who work for wages in this country.
More than 600 auto workers protested the outsourcing of their jobs to Mexico outside of Ford Motor Company's corporate headquarters on Friday. United Auto Workers Local 36 organized the protest in part because the company increasing the new car lines being built in Mexico. The union also believes the company may be planning to shut down its assembly plant in Wixom, Michigan. Since 2002, the plant has lost 55% of its hourly workforce, and production of the Thunderbird will be phased out next year. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The Economic Policy Institute has released a paper that has troubling findings concerning U.S. trade with China over the past 14 years. According to the study, China is gaining an advantage in auto and aerospace industries. Also, China's exports of products that depend on high-skilled labor, such as computers and electronics, are growing faster than its export of low-value labor-intensive items, such as shoes. More than 1.5 million U.S. jobs have been lost because of the deficit.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. Broadcasting from good old working class stainless steel microphone high up in the Green Mountains of the People's Republic of Vermont. Tom Hartman here with you on terrestrial radio stations from California to North Carolina on the Sirius satellite, streaming around the planet on radiopower.org, etc. Oh, and with archives of White Rose Society. Let us never forget White Rose Society. Now, moving along in the science vein, I just want to share a couple of these. This is just fascinating stuff and a little scary. First of all, this is just an extraordinary juxtaposition. On January 22nd, which would have been, what, Saturday, there was an article published by Lee Dayton, a science writer in The Australian. Suffocating global warming is to blame for the worst mass extinction on Earth, according to international researchers tracking the cause of the Great Dying 250 million years ago. This was when 90% of all... Now, there was another Great Dying 65 million years ago. They're pretty sure that had to do with an asteroid that hit the Earth, or a comet or a meteorite or whatever. But this one, the 250 million year ago one, they've been trying to figure out what caused this thing, and they finally got it nailed down. And what caused it, apparently, was an extraordinary explosion of volcanic activity in Siberia that threw so much sulfur dioxide, which is a greenhouse gas, not unlike carbon dioxide, a little larger molecule, but so much sulfur dioxide up into the atmosphere that it warmed the planet for a period of decades, at least, and that it killed off 90% of all the life in the sea and 75% of all the life in land because they were dying from too much heat and too little oxygen. In fact, here's the exact quote. Animals and plants, both on land and in the sea, were dying at the same time and apparently from the same cause, too much heat and too little oxygen. This is from Professor Peter Ward, the University of Washington in Seattle. They pieced together the fossil records of land animal extinctions from sites in South Africa, Europe, and North America. They discovered that a 10 million year long period of gradual extinctions led to a final extinction pulse 250 million years ago. Now, this is pretty startling, that global warming, literally, this is runaway global warming. Where it's just, you know, hotter and hotter and hotter and hotter. Just wiped out virtually all life on Earth 250 million years ago. And now to the following day, in yesterday's newspaper, this was in the Independent, the one that I have here in my hand, it was in the Independent in the United Kingdom, but it's all over the world. I mean, this is a remarkable story in the Independent by Jeffrey Lean. Global warming. Actually, before I read this to you, I've got to tell you, on Friday night, I was watching the ABC Evening News, or maybe it was, no, it must have been Saturday. Maybe it was even Sunday. Anyhow, in the last couple of days, I was watching the ABC Evening News, and, you know, the 7 o'clock news, or 6:30 news, or whatever it is. And, yeah, it was over the weekend. And the newscaster did a story, or actually one of the correspondents did a story about, you think the weather's getting weird? It sure is. We've got more hurricanes, more tornadoes, blah, blah, blah. And then they kind of said, they wrapped it up by saying, but it's been weird before. Now, obviously, I'm paraphrasing, you know, but the point is that, and then the commentator came back and said, well, I guess it just shows that what goes around comes around, or these things go in cycles, or something. Nobody was willing to mention the fact that 8 out of the last 10 years have been the hottest years in the history of human recording. Nobody was willing to mention the fact that we are seeing radical weather patterns year after year after year in ways and following trend lines that have never been seen before by humans, at least in human memory, in, you know, say, 10,000 years. Nobody was willing to mention the fact that carbon dioxide concentrations in the atmosphere have gone from around 320 parts per million where they were in the 1700s up to pushing 400 parts per million now. That's, you know, a 20-25% increase in carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, which warms up the atmosphere. Because carbon dioxide lets the heat in from the sun but doesn't let it escape. It's like greenhouse gas, which then increases the amount of water vapor in the atmosphere, because the warmer the atmosphere is, the more water vapor it can hold. And water vapor is an even more effective greenhouse gas than carbon dioxide. So then the atmosphere heats up even more, which then allows it to hold even more water, which allows it to heat warm up even more. And it's called a positive feedback loop. It's a dangerous thing. It's like a, you know, a spiral. And once you hit a threshold point, a tip-over point, some really radical things can start to happen. For example, if the ice in the Arctic, in the North Pole of the United States, where there's no land mass, unlike Antarctica on the South Pole, where there's a continent, but there's no land mass up there at the North Pole, if that ice all melts, the Gulf Stream may change. I mean, it may stop running. Or, for that matter, if just enough fresh water melts out of Greenland and dumps into the Arctic, in the North Arctic, the Gulf Stream may collapse. If the Gulf Stream collapses, the Gulf Stream is where you've got warm water coming from the Pacific around the southern coast of Africa and the southern tip of Africa, coming up through, you know, over the equator, picking up even more heat there, runs by the United States, and then across, and then it falls. By the time it gets to about 100 kilometers or 100 miles south, about almost 200 kilometers south of Greenland, of the southern tip of Greenland, it falls deep down into the ocean and then flows as an underground river back around, you know, back down through the South Atlantic and back into the Pacific, and it reemerges halfway to Hawaii 1,000 years later. The Gulf Stream carries more water than 100 times more water than all the rivers on Earth. And it also carries the heat that allows Europe, which is at the same latitude as the northern parts of Alaska that are permafrost, to have climates where you can grow food. It's the reason why Europe is not in an ice age. When the Gulf Stream shuts down, it will not stop snowing. It will not stop snowing in Europe and much of northeastern North America, and we will be back in that glacier period that we were in 13,000 years ago. And what will cause that? One of the things that can cause that is the warming of the atmosphere. So the Europeans, understandably, are a little more concerned about this than we Americans. We only have to deal with the fact that as the atmosphere gets warmer, it contains more energy. And storms and tornadoes and hurricanes and typhoons and all this, these are all functions of the amount of energy in the atmosphere. So we're just having to deal with more drastic and horrific hurricanes and wind and snowstorms and windstorms and mudslides and all this guy. That's what we have. We're not looking at extinction as a result of an ice age coming up. So having said all that, global warming has already hit the danger point, or as Jeffrey Lean in the UK Independent has already hit the danger point that international attempts to curb it are designed to avoid, according to the world's top climate watchdog. Now, here's what's amazing. The guy who said this, Rajendra Pachauri, he was selected for this job on the IPCC, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, by George Bush. The guy who used to be there, Dr. Robert Watson, the chief scientist of the World Bank, was also the head of the IPCC, and he was saying, There's a global warming crisis. And so in 2001, Exxon sent a letter to the White House saying, get rid of this guy. And the White House, according to the IPCC, Watson was replaced specifically, quote, at the request of the U.S., end quote. The Bush administration then lobbied other countries in favor of Dr. Panchoury, whom former Vice President Al Gore called the let's drag our feet candidate, and got him elected to replace Dr. Watson, a British-born naturalized American who had repeatedly called for urgent action. So we've got the guy in there at the IPCC, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. This is the international scientific body that represents all the nations of the world, and is its sole job is to figure out what the heck is going on with global warming and climate change, and what should we do about it. And we now have 114 governments showed up for this conference in Mauritius, I'm not sure how to pronounce it, this month. And what does this guy say? This guy who was a foot dragger that is in there, the hand-picked candidate of George W. Bush to be the head of the IPCC. He said, and I quote, "The world has already reached the levels of dangerous concentrations of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere," end quote. And he called for immediate and, quote, "very deep," end quote, cuts in pollution if humanity is to, quote, "survive," end quote. He ended his speech with this sentence: "We are risking the ability of the human race to survive." He told delegates, "Climate change is for real. We have just a small window of opportunity, and it's closing rather rapidly. There is not a moment to lose." Afterwards, he told The Independent on Sunday that widespread dying of coral reefs and rapid melting of ice in the Arctic had driven him to the conclusion that the danger point the IPCC had set up to avoid had already been reached. About a quarter of the world's coral reefs have already been destroyed as a result of global warming. In November, a multi-year study by 300 scientists concluded that the Arctic was warming twice as fast as the rest of the world, and that its ice cap had shrunk by up to 20% in the last three decades. The ice is also 40% thinner than it was in the 1970s and is expected to disappear altogether by 2070. The good doctor also cited alarming measurements, first reported in The Independent on Sunday, showing that levels of carbon dioxide, the main cause of global warming, have leaped abruptly over the past 2 years, suggesting that climate change may be accelerating out of control. Now, this could be one of two things. Actually, there's probably other things it could be, but it could be one of two things that I know about. One is that the rate of industrialization has increased dramatically in the last couple of years. You're seeing China coming online. You're seeing India coming online. These countries are consuming oil like there's no tomorrow. One of the reasons that the Bush administration, the oil guys in the Bush administration, felt it was so important for us to have a heavy footprint in the Middle East was because China has now become our main competitor for Middle Eastern oil. Within a few years, within a year, literally 1 to 3 years, oil production in the world will be outstripped by oil demand. I mean, right now there's about a million barrel a day, surplus in production over demand. In production capacity. So obviously, production meets demand. I mean, you know, if it didn't, you wouldn't have it there, right? But the capacity for production will be exceeded by demand within 1 to 3 years. And at that point, whoever controls the oil controls the world. And China is cutting deals like crazy. They just cut a deal with Iran. They're talking to the Afghan government. They're looking for oil all over the place themselves. We're talking about drilling in the Arctic, blah, 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 blah. So, but instead of the United States, and China is moving very rapidly to develop alternative energy, renewable energy sources. They just built the Three Gorges Dam, the largest dam project in the world. What are we doing here? Nothing. Dick Cheney was put in charge of two commissions when he became president in 2001, or vice president in 2001. Some would say president. He was put in charge of the Energy Commission, and he was put in charge of the Anti-Terrorism Commission. The Anti-Terrorism Commission never met before 9/11. The worst national security screw-up in the history of the United States happened when Dick Cheney was in charge of counterterrorism, Counterterrorism Committee, and Condoleezza Rice was in charge of national security. And so what happens? Well, he gets to be made vice president again, and she gets to be made secretary of state. I mean, it makes no sense to me. But setting that aside, the other thing that he was responsible for was the Energy Commission. And they did meet nine times behind closed doors with executives from the oil industry. And they came up with a national energy policy for the United States. Does it call for us to reduce our consumption of fuel, to reduce our production of carbon dioxide, to reduce our dependence on foreign oil? No. It calls for us to actually increase it, build more power plants, and seize control of other countries' oil. It's nuts. It's just nuts. I mean, Jimmy Carter was right back in the late 70s when he said that if we embark on a major campaign right now to develop renewable energy, we can be independent of Middle Eastern oil by the year 2000. And we could have. And he put into place all of these tax credits and grants and all sorts of. When we first moved to Vermont here a decade ago, we were looking at houses. There were all these houses that you didn't see because you get all these tax benefits for doing it. Ronald Reagan came into office with money from the oil industry. They put him into power. His first official act of office removed the solar collectors from the roof of the White House. And then immediately roll back all of Carter's programs. We don't need no stinking renewable energy. We'll just burn all the oil we can get. And there's plenty of oil. Yeah. So now we're seeing the consequences of this. And what does the Bush administration want to do about this? They want to pass the Cheney energy policy that was worked out in secret with Kenny Boy Lay. Ken Lay was there. I mean, that's incredible. And you got, Schwarzenegger having secret meetings with Ken Lay at the Beverly Hills Hotel during the energy crisis in California, back when he was an actor, back before anybody was talking about him becoming governor. It's like, what these guys are up to. Just totally scary stuff. Totally scary stuff. I got to tell you. And we need to be speaking out. Contact your elected officials now.
Attention, Tom Hartman listeners. I'm here with Brush Lintball.
This is the old Brusho, Brush Lintball.
To tell you about DemocraticMatch.com. You're listening to Tom Hartman because you're intelligent, progressive, and like the thousands of members at DemocraticMatch.com, you don't drink right-wing Kool-Aid. Right, Brush?
Right-wing wackos are fine to laugh at on all their radio programs, but no one wants to date one, right?
DemocraticMatch.com is a dating site made specifically for Democrats and other progressive individuals who want to date those with similar worldviews.
What do you think of Democrats these days, Brush?
Democrats are smarter. Democrats are more evolved. Democrats are more fun. Democrats make better lovers. Democrats have better hearts.
This is your chance to meet other liberals who listen to Tom Hartman, people who cherish the principles of our democracy, believe in a woman's right to choose, believe in protecting our incredible planet. In short, DemocraticMatch.com gives you the opportunity to meet a real soulmate. So what have you got to lose? Sign up today at DemocraticMatch.com.
Real novelists don't go to graduate school, they go to prison. Mike Palasek is one of America's newest, most exciting political storytellers. Palasek is a former federal prisoner for peace, county commissioner, city jail prisoner, Iowa Democratic Party candidate for Congress, football co-captain, small-town newspaper reporter, and bakery delivery truck driver. Check out www.iowapeace.com for Mike's books and read his weekly column, Is This Heaven? The View from Iowa. Go to iowapeace.com for ordering information for Twins, Joe Coffey's Revolution, KGB, The Truth, The Last Liberal Outlaw, and Prophets Without Honor. Palasek's books are recommended by Howard Zinn, Danny Schechter, BlueEar.com, The Des Moines Register, and Prisoners Everywhere.
For thousands of years, millions of people have trusted the healing power of herbs. Healing Hollers, an earth-based business in the Southern Ozarks, has formulated medical herbal salves proven effective in promoting healing and providing relief for many skin conditions, including a healing salve with antiseptic and antibacterial properties to treat cuts, burns, scalds, and wounds, an antifungal salve safe and effective for athlete's foot, ringworm, nail, and other fungal infections, and a soothing calendula salve to reduce pain and inflammation from dry skin, eczema, and rashes, including diaper rash. These salves contain only herbs and roots organically grown or ethically wildcrafted natural oils and beeswax from the Ozarks. To learn more about these salves and other natural products from Healing Hollers, go to www.healing-hollers.com. That's www.healing-hollers.com.
Ice ages have chilled the earth for billions of years, but their origin remains unproven. I'm Steve Poplin for Earthwatch Radio. Scientists have found evidence of an ice age some 3 billion years ago, the earliest known, but they still aren't sure what causes these periodic deep freezes. Doug McDougall is an earth scientist at the University of California, San Diego, and author of a new book called Frozen Earth. He says three main factors seem required to set off an ice age. The most influential one is the Earth's uneven path around the sun.
The energy that we get from the sun is one of the main things that depletes quite substantially. So that certainly has an impact on whether the Earth's surface is cool or warm.
McDougall says a second factor is the composition of the atmosphere, especially levels of greenhouse gases.
Particularly carbon dioxide is the greenhouse gas that preys on regulating Earth's surface temperatures in terms of whether or not an ice age can start.
The third factor is the position of the continents, which move slowly about the Earth's surface.
So when there are continents near the poles, as there are today, the Antarctic, for example, it's easier for ice to build up in those cold regions. Once that happens, the ice reflects sunlight, reflects solar energy, and eventually the whole Earth's climate cools.
McDougall says the Earth has been in an ice age for nearly 3 million years. Our current warm spell is a temporary break from the advance of glaciers, but they're not likely to return for thousands of years. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
It's coming through a hole in the air.
And what might that be, Leonard?
Those bands in Tiananmen Square.
It's coming to America, maybe?
It's coming from the field that this ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there.
He has such an...
From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day. Of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay, democracy is coming to the USA.
Some of this bumper music is just so good, you gotta play it. That's Leonard Cohen. Democracy is coming. Welcome back, my friends. 4 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, Ken in Fraser, Michigan on the line. Hey, Ken, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom. Hey, this, what you were just talking about, you said you read that, what, in the Independent?
Yeah, it's actually the headline right now, or it was a few hours ago in Common Dreams News Center, commondreams.org, but it's, yeah, it's in the Independent, the UK. The headline is Global Warming Approaching Point of No Return, warns leading climate expert.
No return. It might be why this morning on NPR I heard that Ford Automotive is going ahead with hydrogen cars.
Oh, interesting.
They were talking about it like in a strange way, like it... That's it. We're going to hydrogen. It's going to happen.
Yeah. Well,
we've got to get everyone used to it.
Yeah. It's and if the hydrogen, see, there's two different kinds of hydrogen technology. One is where you take oil and extract the hydrogen from it, because there's a lot of hydrogen in hydrocarbons. And the other is where you use a renewable energy source like wind power or solar power to split water molecules into hydrogen and oxygen, release the oxygen in the atmosphere, store the hydrogen. And if we were to use the latter, if we were to develop on our, we could do it along our seacoasts exclusively, and pump that hydrogen into the same tanks that are now taking liquefied natural gas, put liquefied hydrogen into them, and we've already got a distribution system for a gas. I mean, there are homes all over America that are heated by gas right now. The conversion of hydrogen would be fairly minimal. And so there's a large infrastructure already waiting for a hydrogen economy. For automobiles, it'd be a little more problematic. I mean, you'd have fairly radical changes in gas stations and car technology. But a lot of the infrastructure is already there. It's just the question is, the Bush administration wants a hydrogen economy based on oil, where they split oil and extract the hydrogen from it using, you know, catalytic converters and things like that. And most rational scientists say, no, you want a hydrogen economy based on using renewable sources of energy like wind and solar to split water into hydrogen. And then it's totally renewable, and the only waste product is water vapor, you know, when the hydrogen recombines with oxygen. So that's it. Ken, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Yeah, I appreciate the call. We'll see where Ford or Chrysler or all these companies, we'll see where they go with that technology, if they decide that they're going to do it. Because I know that the Bush administration is pushing the hydrogen car initiative, but it's a oil-based hydrogen. You know, it's another gift to the oil industry, basically. Anyhow, thanks for being with us today. We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
This is Veronique Raskin. I'm the president and founder of the Organic Wine Company. What happened when you, Thomas, gave us a plug? The phone started ringing. The first person said, whatever it is that you're selling, I want to buy it. And for the next few hours, the phone rang nonstop. The people who listen to your program are what they call in the business my target audience, people who are conscious and responsible and try to do the right thing and try to think for themselves. I would encourage anyone to advertise on the Thomas Hartman Show, absolutely, without question, whether that be on the national level or the local level.